Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Truce at Bakura by Kathy Tyers. Above a dead world, one habitable moon hung suspended like a cloud-veiled turquoise. The eternal hand that held the chain of its orbit had dusted its velvet backdrop with brilliant stars, and cosmic energies danced on the wrinkles of space-time, singing their timeless music, neither noticing nor caring for the Empire, the Rebel Alliance, or their brief, petty wars. But on that petty, human scale of perspective, a fleet of starships orbited the moon's primary. Carbon streaks scored the sides of several ships. Droids swarmed around some, performing repairs. Metal shards that had been critical spaceship components, and human and alien bodies, orbited with the ships. The battle to destroy Emperor Palpatine's second Death Star had cost the Rebel Alliance heavily. Luke Skywalker hustled across one cruiser's landing bay, red-eyed but still suffused with victory after the Ewok celebration. He ached, a dull gnawing in all his bones from the longest day of his life. Today, no, it was yesterday, he had met the Emperor. Yesterday he had almost paid with his life for his faith in his father. Yet a passenger sharing his shuttle up to the cruiser from the Ewok village had already asked if Luke had really killed the Emperor and Darth Vader single-handed. Luke wasn't ready to announce the fact that Darth Vader had been Anakin Skywalker, his father. Still, he'd answered firmly, Vader killed Emperor Palpatine. Vader had flung him into the second Death Star core. Luke would be explaining that for weeks, he guessed. For now, he merely wanted to check on his X-Wing. To his surprise, it was overrun by service crew. Behind and above it, a Magna Crane lowered R2-D2 into the cylindrical droid socket behind his cockpit. What's up? Luke asked. Oh, sir, answered a khaki-suited crewman, disengaging a collapsible fuel hose. Your relief pilot's going out. Captain Antilles came back on the first shuttle and went out on patrol immediately. He intercepted an Imperial drone ship, one of those antiques they used for carrying messages back before the Clone Wars, incoming from deep space. Incoming. Someone had sent a message to the Emperor. Luke smiled. Guess they haven't heard yet. Wedge wants company? Well, I'm not that tired. I could go. Wedge Antilles had been his friend since the days of the first Death Star, when they'd flown in the final attack together. The crewman didn't smile back. Unfortunately, Captain Antilles touched off a self-destruct cycle while trying to release its message codes. He's manually blocking a critical gap. Cancel the relief pilot, Luke exclaimed. Through the Force, Luke quested outward and found Wedge's presence. His hands moved on the X-Wing's controls almost effortlessly as he steered toward that end of the fleet. Wedge, do you copy? Luke asked over the subspace radio.
Sorry. Almost out of range of my ship's pickup. You see, I've got to keep these two crystals apart. It's a self-destruct of some sort.
Crystals?
Electrite crystal leads. The mechanism's trying to push them together. Let them touch. Poof. The whole fusion engine.
Tumbling slowly above the blue glimmer of Endor, Luke spotted Wedge's X-Wing. Alongside it drifted a 9-meter-long cylinder bearing Imperial markings, fully as long as the X-Wing and almost all engine, a type of drone ship the Alliance still couldn't afford. For some reason, the drone filled him with foreboding. The Empire never used such antiques anymore for sending messages. Why hadn't the sender been able to use standard Imperial channels? Wedge clung to one end of the cylinder, connected to the X-Wing by a life support tether. He must have blown his cockpit air and dove for the cylinder's master control the moment he realized he'd accidentally armed it to detonate. Even in his pressure suit and closed-face emergency helmet, he couldn't survive vacuum long. Closing in, Luke reversed engines with care. Wedge held one hand inside a hinged panel. That hand must be half-crushed. Luke frowned. Sweat trickled on his forehead. If he didn't hurry, his friend was dead. Already, Wedge's sense in the force wobbled dizzily. Cautiously, Luke slipped his lightsaber into the flare ejection port's feed tube. He launched it out, then extended a hand toward it across 10 meters of vacuum. He sent it gliding toward Wedge. As it neared the target, he twisted his wrist. The green-white blade appeared, silent in the vacuum of space. Wedge's wide brown eyes blinked inside his faceplate. On my signal, jump free.
Luke, I'll lose fingers.
Way free, Luke repeated. You'll lose more than fingers if you stay there. At moments like these, moisture farming for Uncle Owen back on Tatooine didn't sound too bad. Show me the crystals, said Luke. Look at them closely.
Okay.
Wedge pulled around to stare into the hatchway. Letting the lightsaber drift, Luke felt for Wedge's friendly presence. Through Wedge's eyes and fighting the excruciating pain in Wedge's hand, Luke glimpsed a pair of round, multifaceted jewels, one inside his palm, the other crushing inward at the end of a spring mechanism from the back of his hand. Fist-sized, the jewels reflected pale, golden sparks of saber light out the hatch onto Wedge's orange suit. If Wedge jumped, Luke would have a second at most to slice one crystal free, and only a little longer before Wedge fainted. Jump on the count of three. Jump hard. One, Luke said. Wedge didn't object. Clenching his teeth, Luke eased into a closer accord with the saber. So long as he focused on the saber, he could maintain control. Two, keeping up a steady count, he felt the saber, the crystals, and the critical gap, all as parts of the universe's wholeness. Three, nothing happened. Jump, Wedge! Weakly, Wedge launched himself. Luke swept in, one crystal soared free, reflecting a whirling green kaleidoscope onto the X-Wing's upper S-foil. Wedge's body rose and sank with each breath as he floated upright in the fleet's clear tank of healing Bacta fluid. Much to Luke's relief, they'd saved all his fingers. A surgical droid named 2-1B had run tests on Luke himself and pronounced a diagnosis of sudden and massive calcification of his structure of the rare type brought on by severely conductive exposure to electrical and other energy fields. Yesterday, Luke realized, Emperor Palpatine leering as blue-white sparks leapt off his fingertips. Luke had thought he was dying. He was dying. The surgical droid had urged him to rest, but Luke was eager to get to the war room and find out if the drone ship's message had been decoded yet. Besides, his pain had been worse when he'd lost his right hand. Come to think of it, the bionic hand didn't ache. Some bright spot. Large enough to hold 100, the flagship's war room was almost empty. A service droid slid along the curve of an inner bench, passing between a light tube and glimmering white bulkheads. Down near the circular projection table that dominated the war room center, near a single tech on duty, Mon Mothma, the woman who'd founded and who now led the Rebel Alliance, stood with General Crix Medin. Mon Mothma's presence gleamed visibly in her long white robes and invisibly through the Force, and the bearded Medin's confidence had grown since the battle for Endor. They both looked in Luke's direction and frowned. Luke smiled half-heartedly and gripped the handrests of the repulsor chair he'd commandeered out of the medical suite, steering it down the steps toward them.
"You'll never learn, will you?"
General Medin's frown got flatter.
"You belong in sick bay. This time we'll have 2-1B knock you out."
Luke's cheek twitched. "Well, what about that message? Some Imperial commander burned 250,000 credits on that antique drone." A small light projection table at the side lit up, and above it appeared a miniature hologram of Admiral Akbar, with huge eyes bulging at the sides of his high-domed ruddy head. Although the Mon Calamarian had commanded the battle for Endor from a chair under the broad starry viewport on Luke's left, Admiral Akbar felt more comfortable on his own cruiser. Life support there was fine-tuned to Calamarian standard.
"Commander Skywalker, you need to consider the risks you take more carefully."
"I will, Admiral, when I can." R2-D2 wasn't letting Luke out of photoreceptor range for 30 seconds. The blue-domed droid rolled along the upper computer bank to a drop platform. There he downloaded himself, then rolled close to Luke's float chair. R2's rebukes were probably coming straight from 2-1B. General Medin smirked behind his beard. Luke hadn't understood a single whistle, but he could guess. All right, R2, pull in your wheels. Young Lieutenant Matthews straightened up over the side of the console. Here it comes, he announced. The decoded message was just coming through.
Imperial Governor Violet Nereus of the Bakura system to his most excellent Imperial Master, Palpatine. Greetings in haste.
They hadn't heard. Months, maybe years, would pass before much of the galaxy realized that the Emperor's reign had ended.
Bakura is under attack by an alien invasion force from outside your domain. Urgent, repeat, urgent. Send stormtroopers.
Mon Mothma turned to a shoulder-high droid that stood silently nearby. Access the embedded data files. Apply our most recent Imperial codes. Locate this world, Bakura. Star sparks appeared in a confirmation Luke recognized.
Here, madam,
the droid announced. One speck turned red.
That's virtually the edge of the rim worlds, Luke observed.
From a speaker at Luke's left, Leia's voice projected clearly.
How large is the Imperial force at the system?
Leia was down on Endor's surface in the Ewok village. Luke hadn't known she was listening in, but he should have assumed it. She was allegedly resting with Han Solo, recovering from that blaster burn on her shoulder and helping the furry little Ewoks bury their dead, not watching for new trouble. The intelligence droid answered her.
Bakura is defended by an Imperial garrison. The sender of this message has added subtext, reminding Emperor Palpatine that what forces they have are antiquated due to the system's remoteness.
Evidently, the Empire didn't anticipate any competition for Bakura.
Leia's voice sounded disdainful.
But now, by the time the Imperials reassemble, Bakura could fall to the invasion force. Or it could be part of the Alliance. If the Imperials can't help the Bakurans, we must.
Admiral Akbar's image planted finny hands in the vicinity of its lower torso.
What do you mean, Your Highness?
Leia leaned against the wattle and daub wall of an Ewok treehouse and rolled her eyes toward the dome of its high thatched roof. Han sprawled casually beside her, leaning on an elbow and twirling a twig between his fingers. She raised a handheld comlink.
If we send aid to Bakura, she answered Admiral Akbar, it's possible that Bakura would leave the Empire out of gratitude. That chance is worth investing a small task force, and you'll need a high-ranked negotiator.
Han lay back, crossed his arms behind his head, and murmured, You step off into an Imperial world, and you're an entry in somebody's credit register. You got a price on your head. She frowned.
Can we afford to send troops, given the shape we're in? We've lost 20% of our forces, battling only part of the Emperor's fleet. Any Imperial battle group could do a better job at Bakura.
But then the Empire would remain in control there.
Surprising her, Han pulled the comlink toward him.
Admiral, I doubt we can afford not to go. An invasion force that big is trouble for this whole end of the galaxy. And she's right. It's us that ought to go. You just better send a ship that can make a fast getaway in case the Imperials get ideas.
What about the price on your head, laser brains?
Leia whispered.
You're not going without me, Highnessness.
That night, Luke dreamed. He sprawled on the deck of a strange spaceship, a huge reptilian alien, brown scale, with a blunt, oversized head trumped toward him, waving a weapon. Luke ignited his lightsaber. Heavy with the Emperor's fingerprints, it slid through his grip. Then he recognized the big lizard's weapon, a restraining bolt owner, used to control droids.
What? Disbelieving, he looked down. He had a droid's stiff-jointed body.
Luke fought back to consciousness. He felt a powerful presence in the Force. On the foot of his flotation bed sat Ben Kenobi, robed as usual in unbleached homespun.
Obi-Wan?
Luke murmured.
What's happening at Bakura?
Ionized air danced around the figure.
Emperor Palpatine achieved first contact with the aliens attacking Bakura. During one of his Force meditations, he offered them a deal, one that can no longer be honored.
What kind of deal? What danger are the Bakurans in?
You must go. If you do not attend to the matter, personally, Duke, Bakura, and all the worlds, both Allied and Imperial, will know a far greater disaster than you can imagine.
Shimmering air brightened and rushed inward, stirring faint air currents as the image vanished.
So, you see... Luke glanced up. The clinic lounge's door slid open. Han and Leia paused in the hatchway, then squeezed in between General Medine, who stood nearby, and Mon Mothma, seated on a stasis unit.
Excuse us,
Han grunted, and backed up against the bulkhead. Leia sat down beside Mon Mothma.
Admiral Akbar's projected image shone on the floor beside R2, who stood at attention maintaining the projection.
General Obi-Wan Kenobi has given you orders?
That's it, sir.
But you are in serious condition, Commander Skywalker.
I won't be by the time we reach Bakura.
Then we shall send Bakura a small but strong strike force to support Princess Leia in her role as chief negotiator. 5 Corellian gunships and a corvette will escort our smallest fighter carrier. Commander Skywalker, will that be enough?
Luke started. You're giving me command, sir?
I don't see that we have any choice, Mon Mothma said quietly.
Elated by the honor, Luke saluted her.
Early the following day, Luke examined the status boards of the newly commissioned rebel carrier, Flurry.
She's ready to jump, he observed.
Ready and eager, Commander.
Captain Tessa Manchisco nudged his elbow. Fresh from the Virgilian Civil War, Captain Manchisco wore her black hair hanging in 6 thick braids down the back of her cream-colored uniform. Her Flurry, a small, unconventional cruiser carrier, retrofitted with all the stolen Imperial components that opportunistic Virgilians could cram on board, carried a Virgilian bridge crew. Besides Manchisco, 3 humans and a noseless, red-eyed Duro navigator. Inside the Flurry's hangar bays, Admiral Akbar's crews had packed 20 X-Wing fighters, 3 A-Wings, and 4 Cruiser Assault B-Wing fighters, as many as the Alliance could spare. Riding shotgun above the cruiser, drifted Han's souped-up freighter, the Millennium Falcon. Han, Chewbacca, Leia, and C-3PO, who had returned from Endor as soon as the expedition was approved, were already on board. Luke's initial elation over being given command had already faded. It was one thing to fly a fighter under someone else's orders with the Force as his ally. He now carried responsibility for every life and every ship. On an outer deck of a vast battlecruiser called the Shriwer, Deb Ciwara rested his slim brown hand on a prisoner's left shoulder.
It'll be all right, he said softly.
The other human's fear beat at his mind like a three-tailed lash.
There's no pain. You have a wonderful surprise ahead of you.
Wonderful indeed, a life without hunger, cold, or selfish desire. The prisoner, an Imperial of much lighter complexion than Dev's, slumped in the entechment chair. He'd given up protesting, and his breath came in gasps. Pliable bands secured his forelimbs, neck, and knees, but only for balance. With his nervous system deionized at the shoulders, he couldn't struggle. A slender intravenous tube dripped pale blue magnetizing solution into each of his carotid arteries while tiny servo pumps hummed. It took only a few mils of magsol to attune the tiny fluctuating electromagnetic fields of human brain waves to the Siruk entechment apparatus. Behind Dev, Master Fear Wurong trilled a question in Siruvi.
Is it calm yet?
Dev switched from human speech to Siruvi. Dev sang back, "Come enough. He's almost ready." Sleek russet scales protected Fear Wurung's 2-meter length from beaked muzzle to muscular tail tip, and a prominent black V crest marked his forehead. He swung a broad, glowing white metal catchment arc down to cover the prisoner from mid-chest to nose. Dev could just peer over it and watch the man's pupils dilate. At any moment...
Now, Dev announced.
Fear Wurung touched a control. His muscular tail twitched with pleasure. The fleet's capture had been good today. Alongside his master, Dev would work far into the night. Before entechment, prisoners were noisy and dangerous. Afterward, their life energies powered droids of Siruvi choosing. The catchment arc hummed up to pitch. Dev backed away. Inside that round human skull, a magsol-drugged brain was losing control. though Master Fear Wurong assured him that the transfer of incorporeal energy was painless, every prisoner screamed. As did this one, when Fear Wurong threw the catchment arc switch. The arc boomed out a sympathetic vibration as brain energy leapt to an electromagnet perfectly attuned to Magsol. Through the force rippled a ululation of indescribable anguish. Dev staggered and clung to the knowledge his masters had given him. The prisoners only thought they felt pain. He only thought he sensed their pain. By the time that he screamed, all of the subject's energies had leapt to the catchment arc. The screaming body already was dead.
Transferred.
Here Wurong's fluting whistle carried an amused undercurrent. Such a paternal attitude made Dev feel awkward. He was inferior, human, soft and vulnerable like a wriggling white larva before metamorphosis. He longed to sit for entechment and transfer his life energy to a powerful battle droid. Quietly, he cursed the talents that sentenced him to go on waiting. The catchment arc hummed louder, fully charged, more alive now than the limp body on the chair. Fear Wurong faced a bulkhead stippled with hexagonal metal skins.
Ready down there?
His question came out as a rising labial whistle, ending with a snap of the toothed beak, then two sibilant whistles falling to throat stop. It had taken Dev years to master Shiruvi, and countless sessions of hypnotic conditioning that also left him yearning to please Fear Wurong. Deck 16 of the huge battle cruiser finally whistled an answer. Fear Wurong pressed his three-fingered foreclaw against a button. The catchment arc fell silent. The lucky human's life energy was even now sparking in a reservoir coil behind one small pyramidal battle droid's sensor clusters. Two small young Poeks, who looked like smaller versions of the masterly Siruk, brought in the next prisoner, a wrinkled human who struggled to wrench his arms out of his guard's foreclaws. If only he knew how unnecessary all this resistance was. Dev stepped forward. He helped the two Poeks, and Fear Wurong positioned the smelly, perspiring human on the chair.
Relax, murmured Dev. It'll be all right. There's no pain. You have a wonderful surprise ahead of you.
At last, all the day's prisoners were safely intact. Fear Wurong led Dev back up spacious corridors to their quarters and poured soothing kasa for both of them. Dev drank gratefully, seated in the circular cabin's only chair. Siruk needed no furniture. Hissing contentment, Fear Wurong settled his broad tail and hindquarters comfortably onto the warm gray deck.
Are you happy, Dev?
Liquid black eyes blinked over the kasa mug and reflected the bitter red tonic. It was an offer of solace. Whenever life saddened Dev, whenever he missed the sense of wholeness he'd had when his mother force-linked with him, Fear Wurong took him to blue-scaled Elder Shtkith for renewal therapy.
Very happy, Dev answered truthfully. A good day's work. Much kindness.
Fear Wurung's scent tongues flicked out of his nostrils, taste-smelling Dev's presence.
Stretch out, Dev. What do you see tonight in the hidden universe?
All Siruk were force-blind. Through Dev, who had been trained in the force by his mother back on Chandrila, the Siruk had learned of the Emperor's death moments after it happened. Because the force existed in all life, Dev had felt the shockwave of power ripple through spirit and space. Dev shook his head and answered,
Outside, I sense only the quiet winds of life itself.
Months ago, his potency, the Shriftut, had responded immediately when Emperor Palpatine offered prisoners in exchange for tiny 2-meter droid fighters of his own. Palpatine couldn't have known how many dozen million Siruk lived on Hwek in their distant star cluster. Quickly, Admiral Ifpikis captured and questioned several Imperial citizens. This human empire, they learned, stretched out for parsecs. Its star systems lay like nesting sands, fertile for the planting of Siruvi life. But then the Emperor died. There would be no bargain. The traitorous human had abandoned them to get home as best they could, with the fleet's energy almost spent. Admiral Ifpikis had come ahead with the battlecruiser Shriwur and a small advance force. The main fleet hung back, waiting for news of success or failure. If they could take a major human world, the Intekment equipment, Master Fiwurung's domain, would give them the human empire.
Bakura, when it fell, would provide the technology to construct dozens of entechment chairs. Each intact Bakuran would power or shield a battle droid fighter or vitalize some critical ship component on one of the large cruisers. With dozens of entechment teams trained and equipped, the Saruvi fleet could take the humans' populous core worlds. There were a dozen thousand planets to liberate. So much kindness to accomplish. Star Street shrank on Luke's triangular forward view screen as the Flurry and her escorts dropped out of hyperspace into the Bakuran system. Once he'd checked deflector shields, he swung his chair to get the master computer's in-system status report while Captain Manchisco's communications officer scanned standard Imperial hailing frequencies. Having spent the voyage in hyperspace making use of Yoda's sketchy lessons in the ancient Jedi art of self-healing, Luke felt better, so long as he moved slowly. Scanners showed 8 planets. The alien ships, half a dozen ovoids covered with blister-like projections, clustered around the system's third world, surrounded on his screens by a virtual sandstorm of small fighters. They all gleamed red for threat, but they weren't all on the same side. Some were Imperials. The Virgilian communications man made contact with the lead Imperial ship. Luke cleared his throat. Before they left Endor, Leia had offered a list of things he might say. They just weren't style. Besides, he wouldn't be dealing with a diplomat or a politician. This was an embattled commander who could spare only seconds for each decision. Imperial Navy, Luke said. This is an alliance battle group. We have the white flag out for you. Looks like you're in need. Would you accept our help as between fellow humans? Sure, there were aliens among the rebels, besides Chewbacca and Luke's Duro-Navigator. One gunship was crewed by 17 Mon Calamari, but the human chauvinist Imperials didn't need to know yet. Musical fragments and garbled voices echoed across the Flurry's bridge, and then...
Alliance Battle Group, this is Commander Peter Thanis of the Imperial Navy. Declare your purpose here.
We intercepted a message Governor Nereus sent to the Imperial fleet. It sounded like serious trouble. As I said, we came to help.
Alliance Battle Group, we would be grateful for assistance. I am coding a status report 20 cycles below this frequency.
Only someone who already considered himself beaten would accept marginally identified reinforcements. Luke glanced at his communications officer, who opened the channel Thanis indicated. Within moments, a small percentage of the swirling dots on the status board turned yellow gold for the Imperials. Luke whistled softly. All 6 ovoids and most of the sandstorm still gleamed threat red. The Battle Analysis Computer, or BAC, started spitting information. Commander Thanis had less firepower than the invaders, and 80% of it was concentrated in a single Carrick-class cruiser, the Dominant. Not a big ship, with only a fifth of the crew that a Star Destroyer carried, but it outgunned the Flurry several times. Reading your formation, Luke told his Imperial counterpart.
If you could throw a cone of ships into the gap between those 3 central Siruk cruisers, it could inspire them to retreat. It would buy us time.
Siruk... Luke filed the alien's name at the back of his mind. Commander Thanis, we're going to sweep down from Solar North, just spinward of those 3 cruisers.
Set course, he murmured aside.
Luke felt the Flurry's engine vibrations. The access hatch, which they'd left open for ventilation, slid shut.
What do you think, kid?
Han's voice filtered through the speaker at Luke's elbow.
It doesn't look good.
I've got to get to Bakura.
Leia insisted over the same speaker.
I have to convince this Governor Nereus to declare an official truce. Otherwise, they have no reason to work with us.
Han, did you read how we're going to move?
Oh, yeah. Good luck, hero. I'm afraid our only trained diplomat's going to wait this one out.
What?
Luke heard exclamation points follow Leia's question.
What are you talking about? Excuse us.
Luke pictured Han turning aside, trying to reasonably explain to the more stubborn Skywalker twin... Maybe her brother ought to step in.
Leia, look at the board. Bakura is blockaded. All communications out must be jammed. We haven't heard a peep except some scatter from entertainment bands. You're too valuable to risk in a battle zone.
Oh, and you're not? I have to talk with the governor. Our only hope is to persuade the Bakurans that we're coming in as non-aggressors.
We're not risking you, Luke insisted. Finally, they decided that Leia and Han would head for Bakura's 6th planet... Land there and wait for a rendezvous with Luke. Han Solo kept an eye on the Falcon's sensors as he swung the nimble freighter aside. He was back where he belonged. Alliance repair teams had wasted no time getting his beloved freighter back into service after Lando Calrissian rattled her around inside the second Death Star. Han belonged in this cockpit with good old Chewie in the co-pilot's seat. But it wasn't the same. Leia sat behind the huge Wookiee, wearing a gray combat coverall belted around her waist, leaning forward as if she thought she ought to be co-pilot instead. Well, he'd give Leia everything he owned, the whole galaxy if he could swing it, but she wouldn't bump Chewie out of that chair. 3PO occupied the other back chair, his golden head swiveling from side to side. Han reached for his control panel. The sixth planet filled the scanner displays. Yeah, dirt and ice, Han translated for Leia. But as they got closer, they discovered that the surface was not water ice, but ammonia, or some other smelly volatile that the hover jets melted even in the planet's super-cold temperature.
Yeah, synchronous orbit, good idea.
Han jabbed a sensor.
Looks like Brother Luke's moving in on the Imperial side. I suppose you want to stick around and watch.
Leia frowned. With this scanner board, it's impossible to tell who's on which side.
Oh.
Was she insulting his scanner board? Oh, Han added cheerfully, realizing that maybe they'd finally have a quiet hour as they waited for Luke. Leia followed Han aft to the cargo bay. Once the battle for Endor wound down, they talked for hours. Beneath that smuggler's cynical mask, this man hid ideals like hers. They'd simply been squashed harder. And she dreaded being alone ever since Luke gave her the terrible news. Darth Vader was her... No. Her mind dodged its own defenses and thrust again. No. She would never accept him as her father. Not even if Luke did. The comlink beeped from Han's shirt pocket.
General Solo, General Solo.
Leia wriggled in Han's arms. I knew it, he muttered. Just when Leia had been on the verge of relaxing, he pulled out the comlink.
What?
Sir, I'm picking up a transmission from near space. A droid control unit of some kind appears to be in operation very close by. I'm not certain, but its source appears to be coming closer.
Uh-oh, Leia said softly against his shoulder. She pushed up to her feet. Han had just swung into the cockpit when an electronic shriek rang out from the main console. What's that? Leia asked.
Not good, sweetheart. We just got probed.
By what? From behind the dead icy bulk of Planet Six, 8 or 9 small shapes appeared in mid-starfield, headed directly for the Falcon.
I'm not sticking around to find out. Chewie! Charge the main guns. Come on, Chewie, you and me for the quad guns. We'll see what they're made of. Leia, take us someplace. Suddenly I don't trust Planet Six.
Leia slid into the pilot's seat. Han climbed up the turret and clambered into his seat, then squeezed off a ranging burst.
You're closing fast, he told Leia via the pickup mic on his headset. Is Goldenrod getting any data? What are they?
Deep space droids, that's all he knows.
The droids swooped into close range. 3 soared over the freighter's asymmetrical dish, firing energy bursts toward its main engine. Han poured firepower into a single droid, holding it steady in his sights for as long as it'd take to implode a full-sized TIE fighter. The thing finally blew. The Falcon rocked as another of the 2 remaining droids fired. Han finally overloaded the upper one's shields. A wave of debris sent its buddy spinning out of sight. Silence.
Got everybody, Chewie?
Breathing heavily, Han scrambled back down to the cockpit and swung into his seat with a flourish.
We're gone.
Leia crossed her arms. For all the protection I've gotten, we might as well be doing Luke some good.
Well, strap down, sweetheart. We're going to hustle.
Motionless but for his eyes, Luke glanced from viewscreen to BAC unit. Evidently, his battle group had dropped back out of hyperspace at the moment when the Suruk meant to press their advantage to Bakura's surface. That meant the aliens had thinned their outer arc to push forward, creating an area Luke's small force ought to be able to take easily. Luke keyed the comm.
Gold Leader, Rogue One, that's yours.
Got it, Flurry.
Wedge Antilles sounded confident and experienced. Gold and Rogue Squadron soared in, confounding the aliens' rear guard with a full-speed sweep.
Luke stretched out with his feelings, barely aware of his body. He tried reaching for alien presences, but couldn't find any. As Wedge closed on a tiny enemy fighter, Luke braced himself. Something that small might be just a remote, a drone. Or the aliens could be elfin-sized. Wedge scored. Something weak and inexplicably putrid shrieked in momentary anguish, then fizzled away and died. Luke choked down his gag reflex. Had he felt two presences cry out? He drummed his fingers. The enemy fighters weren't true drone ships then, but piloted. Sort of. Something had died. Miniature Siruk fighters had almost surrounded Wedge and his squadron. Luke fought down panic and funneled his emotional energy into the force around and inside him. He stretched out his own point of presence toward the tiny alien ship dead ahead of Wedge's X-Wing. Touching it, he clearly sensed two almost human presences on board the small fighter. Luke brushed each presence, focusing on the second one. Its misery goaded him to despair. Fear, anger, aggression. The dark side, are they? Yoda had taught him that his methods were as critical as his motives. If he used dark power, even in self-defense, the cost to his soul might be disastrous. He relaxed into the Force. Clinging to control for the sake of his soul and his sanity, he amplified the pitiful will. It had lived once, free. With all the intensity of the doomed, it longed to go on living. Luke planted a suggestion in reply. But a good death is better than life enslaved to hatred, and peace is better than anguish. With startling suddenness, the alien ship altered course directly for one of its squadron mates. It accelerated to ram. Luke wrenched free of the other human's will and sat gasping. Wedge's X-Wing shot out of danger through the gap created by the two alien ships' destruction. The flurry itself rocked under heavy bombardment. Manchisco's gunners had picked off a swarm of tiny fighters, but behind them came more alien ships. The flurry rocked again. Bridge lights blinked. All squadrons! Flurry needs reinforcements, Luke called. Something shimmered mid-battle, the asymmetrical dish of a freighter, dropping out of hyperspace amid the swarm of alien fighters. An alien ship strayed into its line of fire. No more ship.
Figured you needed some help,
said a familiar voice in Luke's ears. Thanks, Ant, he murmured. Nice of you to drop by. Fighter after enemy fighter fled past the flurry for open space. Red warning lights turned amber.
How many do you owe me now, Junior?
Several, Luke answered. Imperial Commander Thanis, whose ships had dropped back, was busy behind the flurry. Luke watched with relief as cluster after cluster of the alien fighters and ships vanished.
That's it. We're done for now.
Luke turned to his communications officer.
Get the out-system scanners up, Delcus. It's my guess they're not going far.
Imperial Bakurin Senator Gariel Captison sat wriggling her toes and making patterns out of keys on her inset touchboard. Under a tiled ceiling that rose to a point above its center, the chamber of the Imperial Bakurin Senate lay silent, except for a soft trickle from the translucent rain pillars at its corners. Roof gutters channeled rainwater into the pillars. Lit from below, they shimmered with the liquid pulse of Bakura's biosphere.
All rise!
Barked the voice near the chamber's door. Gary stood with 39 other senators. Imperial Governor Wylek Nereus strode in, flanked by four black-helmeted naval troopers. Taller than any of them, Governor Nereus wore a specially designed uniform, heavy on braid and gold piping, and skin-tight black gloves that had given him a reputation for being fastidious.
I won't keep you, Nereus said, looking down his long nose. I realize you are busy keeping your sectors pacified.
Gary frowned. Her district's residents were abandoning their jobs to dig shelters, but at least bunker blasting was productive. She glanced at her uncle, Prime Minister Jorg Captison. Here in Salisdar, the Bakurin capital, Captison had been quelling riots using Bakurin police to keep Nereus from sending out stormtroopers from the garrison. Nereus raised a gloved hand to silence murmurers. Once he had their attention, he slowly turned his head and cleared his throat.
Rebel Alliance ships have arrived in the Bakura system.
That gave her a rain-cold shock. Rebels? The Empire allowed no dissent. After Bakura entered the Empire 3 years ago, two minor rebellions had been efficiently quashed. Gary remembered too much of that period.
Both her parents had died, caught in the wrong place during a running battle between insurgents and Imperial troops. Could Nereus's forces protect Bakura from rebel raiders and the Siruk?
The Dominant, our only remaining cruiser, sustained heavy damages. On the advice of my staff, I've ordered our forces to withdraw from the main battle and protect Bakura itself. I request your confirmation of that order.
Senior Senator Orne Belden straightened his back.
Covering your tracks, Governor. So if anything else goes wrong, you can finger us.
It wasn't wise to attract an Imperial Governor's attention, but Belden seemed fearless. Abruptly distracted, Gary checked the time. She had promised Senator Belden that she'd visit his elderly wife this evening. Fiery little Eppy's mind was eroding at only 132 years old. Eppy had been Gary's first real grown-up friend. Nereus smiled blandly and responded to Belden's challenge.
The action I have ordered merely ensures that the rebels will not strike at Bakura.
Prime Minister Capitason stood. Like the Senate, the Prime Minister had lost authority every time he crossed Imperial wishes.
Let us support Governor Nereus, he said without enthusiasm, and confirm his withdrawal order.
He called the vote. Yeri extended an open palm with the majority. Only Belden and two others closed their fists.
Thank you for your support, Nereus purred.
Luke joined Han and Leia on the Millennium Falcon, leaving Captain Manchisco in command of the Flurry. The Alliance ships were cleared to defend the defense web surrounding Bakura. To prove we're with them by sharing their danger, said Leia. After receiving assurances of safe conduct from the Imperials, the negotiation party in the Millennium Falcon made its way down to the stunning Azure world. Leia peered between Han and Chewie's seats at the scanner display. Between twin rivers, an enormous outcrop of pure white rock sparkled in low-angle light. It dazzled Leia's eyes. At a bend in the outcrop, an entire city sat perched on its width. The Falcon touched down softly in the spaceport south of the city. Leia positioned herself in the center of the group with Luke on her right, Han on her left, and Chewie behind them with 3PO and R2. Chewie dropped the entry ramp. They strode to meet the Imperial group beside its shuttle. The tall man at the center of the group had to be Imperial Governor Wylik Nereus. The other individuals in his group kept shifting positions in order to watch him. He was absolutely in charge. They bowed formally to each other.
In the name of the Emperor, welcome to Bakura, the governor intoned.
Leia couldn't have hoped for a better opening than that protocol greeting. Thank you for your welcome, Governor Nereus. You may think me terribly rude to correct your kind words, but it's no longer valid to welcome us in Emperor Palpatine's name. Emperor Palpatine died several days ago. He was killed by his apprentice, Darth Vader.
Vader.
Nereus straightened several millimeters to loom over her.
His Imperial Majesty should never have trusted a Sith Lord. I was prepared to disbelieve you, Your Highness, but Vader as an assassin, I believe.
Lord Vader is dead as well, Your Excellency. Luke's chin rose at the edge of her vision. She knew what he wanted her to add. Maybe Vader had died heroically, but 10 minutes' contribution did not make up for years of atrocities. The governor's people turned aside in pairs to whisper. Leia seized the initiative and presented the others.
Commander Skywalker,
Nereus repeated. She introduced Luke.
Ah, now I recognize your name, Commander. You might know that for some years there has been an astronomical reward offered for your capture. Alive only. That must be something of a distinction among rebel forces.
Yes, I'm aware. This was nothing new to Luke. They were all on the most wanted docket.
And I see two droids. They'll have to be equipped with restraining bolts for the duration of their stay on Bakura.
Fitting droids with those bolts was standard procedure on most planets, compulsory on Imperial worlds and battle stations. We'll see to it, Leia agreed. Governor, Alliance forces intercepted your call for assistance. The Imperial fleet is no longer a presence in this part of the galaxy. We're here to assist you in repelling the invaders. Once that is accomplished, we will leave you. Bakura must choose its own destiny. Governor Nereus gave her a chilling half-smile.
As Leia and Governor Nereus continued a guarded conversation, Luke stretched out and opened himself toward them. Leia, calm and poised. The governor, a facade of manners, the compulsion to dominate, and, underlying both, a gut-wrenching sense of terror. Surely not of us. Luke thought of the despondent, not-quite-human presences on that Siruvi fighter ship and realized the governor could easily jump into the Alliance camp. Temporarily. The rebels boarded a civilian shuttlecraft for a ride into the city. Sure enough, the Bakuran Senate had requested that they attend an immediate emergency session. Their Bakuran pilot guide brought them in low over a huge, wedge-shaped building.
"This is the Bakur complex," announced the pilot.
At a rooftop landing pad, they transferred to a repulsor tram for a rapid ride across the large complex. The tram slid under a vine-draped arch and decelerated. The party disembarked. Door wardens in gold-trimmed violet doublets and hose admitted them to a spacious hallway carpeted in black. Gold traceries ran like veins of precious metal up a row of columns, built in double-wedge style, then crisscrossed overhead on a vaulted ceiling. They paused at an arch carved of glistening white stone. A rough wooden wall blocked most of it, with scanners hovering on silent repulsor lifts over each side, and four Imperial stormtroopers standing guard. They were forced to check all their weapons but the lightsaber, which Luke passed off as a symbol of honor, not an offensive weapon. They left Chewbacca, 3PO, and R2 standing guard over the locker where their weapons were stored, and the rest of them mounted four broad steps into the vast square chamber of the Bakuran Senate. Wylik Nereus must have caught a faster shuttle. He sat there already. Luke sensed that a dark undercurrent of fear pervaded the chamber. This was a world under attack. One trim, athletic-looking man with thick white hair who sat below Governor Nereus at an inner table extended a hand.
"Welcome to Bakura. I'm Prime Minister Yorg Kaptason. I apologize for the haste with which this meeting was convened, but certainly you understand."
Luke scanned the older man. The Prime Minister's charisma made a glimmer in the Force only a shade dimmer than Mon Mothma's. Luke wondered why the governor hadn't eradicated him. "Please don't apologize," said Leia. "This is a desperate hour." Hastily, Luke swept his focus leftward along the inner table, feeling echoes of fear, hope, and hostility. When he reached its end, he worked toward the right along the outer upper table. A sharp-chinned young woman sat third from the left. Light brown hair swept around her face, framing pale flower-petal skin and an intent expression. Luke paused, startled by the way she resonated the Force back to him. Like a deep, slow thrum, her presence echoed his probe with a rich overlay. It wasn't Force strength of her own, at least he didn't think so, but a unique, energizing effect on his awareness. He'd never experienced it before. Hurriedly, he slammed off all perception but his five senses. He mustn't let her distract him. Nereus's strident voice carried distinctly across the chamber.
"Princess Leia, do you understand what you're up against?"
Leia laid a hand on an inner tabletop.
"No," she admitted.
Nereus curled his lips.
"I thought not. Eldworth,"
he ordered into the air,
"run the Shibwara recording."
A holographic projection appeared. It was a young human male with muddy, cream-colored skin, short black hair, and a sweet face with prominent cheekbones. He wore a white robe with blue and green side stripes.
"Humans of Bakura, rejoice! I am Deb Siwara of Garo. I bring you warm greetings of the Siruk Imperium, a culture of many worlds that stretches its hand out to you. Our flagship is the mighty Shriwar, a Siruvi word that means ripe with eggs. We are approaching your galaxy at the behest of your own emperor. Yours is the privilege of assisting the Siruk to liberate the other thousand worlds of the galaxy. You are the first, the spearhead. What an honor!"
The recording shifted. Several dull brown Saurian aliens clustered around one of the alien fighters Luke had battled. Full recognition blasted through Luke's mind. He recognized the creatures from his disturbing dream back at Endor. The boy kept speaking.
"Here you see the most beautiful fighting spacecraft in the galaxy. Even if you never dared to dream of flying the stars, we have one of these fighters for each of you.
Your life energies will leap into one of these battle droids. You will soar between planets. Life energies. Luke recalled the despair of the human presences he'd touched. To allay your fears, let me show you a bit of the entechment procedure. Then, when the time comes, you may greet your destiny with joy. A smaller image appeared beside him. A man sat on a chair, anchored to it with clear binders, head lolling. Those had been humans they'd been fighting. Luke clenched his hands. The Siruk weren't simple slavers, but robbers of souls.
Senator Gariel Captison shuddered and stopped watching. She'd seen this recording 10 times, starting the afternoon it abruptly overrode all Tri-D screens, vid monitors, and entertainment channels on the planet. Were the rebels really here to help, as they claimed? They would have to help Bakura now, simply to escape. Goodbye, for now. I look forward to meeting each of you personally. Come to us soon. The image blinked off.
The senator on Gary's right muttered, "Bloody-handed fluties."
Now that the rebels knew what Siruk did to prisoners, Princess Leia's face matched her white dress. She touched the arm of her dark-haired rebel consort, the smuggler Solo.
"We mean to help you," Leia called. "The Alliance has sent one of its ablest military leaders, Commander Skywalker of the Jedi Order."
Jedi?
Caught with her defenses down, Gary reached for a pendant on her necklace, the half-black, half-white enameled ring of the Cosmic Balance. The deaths of both her parents left her profoundly religious. At least in the balance, she'd found comfort. According to her religion, Jedi had upset the universe by their very existence. For every height, there had to be a depth. She believed that every time an individual learned to wield so much power, it diminished a hapless counterpart somewhere in the galaxy. The power-greedy Jedi had puffed up their abilities without regard for the unknown others they destroyed. The disappearance of the Jedi had become a morality tale. But had some of the Jedi survived? Commander Skywalker looked so young. Not at all like her idea of a Jedi, except in his intensity. He was staring right at her. He might be listening to her thoughts. Leia hadn't missed the senator's whispers and sidelong glances at Luke. This was Vader's legacy. Even Luke's talents, used honorably to support justice and freedom, made people afraid. She must recapture their attention.
"Governor Nereus, don't you see? You must accept rebel assistance or risk your entire population. We're not a large force, but we are well coordinated and equipped with better striking ships than the Empire has allotted you. Would you clear data files for our use? On the Siruk, of course, and any on Bakura itself that wouldn't compromise your security."
Governor Nereus covered his mouth with one meaty hand. Feeling like a bug on a laser dish, Leia held onto her poise and tried to mentally nudge him into cooperating. If this interview dragged on without a promise of mutual assistance, they were sunk.
A tall, elderly man stood up at one of the lower tables.
"Nereus," he exclaimed, "take help where you can get it. Everyone on the planet knows why the rebels are here. If you turn away their help, you're going to provoke an uprising."
"Thank you, Senator Belden."
Governor Nereus narrowed his heavy-lidded eyes.
"All right, Princess Leia. You have your data files. Do you have any other requests for the moment before I have your guide show you to temporary quarters?"
"Are you leaving the truce issue unsettled?"
"You've said your piece. We'll discuss it."
When the Alliance entourage entered the wood panel department that had been assigned to them, they found a message already waiting at the apartment's comm center. Commander Thanis' image appeared on the Tri-D screen and summoned Luke to his office.
"Alone?" Leia exclaimed.
Luke nodded.
"Don't do it," said Han. "Make him meet you someplace neutral."
Luke shrugged.
"Bakura isn't neutral."
"Well, then take Chewie with you."
"I think I should stay here," 3PO suggested helpfully, his hand on his newly fitted restraining bolt as if he were self-conscious. "Han, Leia, Chewie, I can take care of myself," Luke insisted. "The more we act as if we trust them, the more they'll go along with us. I'd rather take R2 anyway."
"Just keep your eyes open, kid," said Han.
"And be careful," 3PO exclaimed.
Sooner than Luke felt ready, his Alliance shuttle landed at the edge of Bakura's military garrison. The nervous pilot helped him unload R2 and then sped away north toward the spaceport where much of the Alliance fleet had landed for repairs. Luke stared up at the garrison's perimeter. Above and behind a fence that crackled with high voltage, stormtroopers paced catwalks between enormous observation towers. Patrol droids converged on him from three directions. This was the Empire, all right. Luke strode boldly toward the gate. Come on, R2. A trooper came walking towards them, carrying an owner for controlling R2's restraining bolt and a repulsor disc with twin side struts. Welcome, Commander Skywalker. The droid will come in on the disc shut down. You may carry your personal owner, but unauthorized reactivation will be construed as hostile.
It's all right, don't worry, Luke said to the droid.
Once the trooper had deactivated R2's main power converter, he and Luke strapped the silent droid to the repulsor disc. They took seats in a shuttle, towing R2 on the disc, and sped over the base. The shuttle passed through huge blast doors between a pair of monstrous guard towers and into a vehicle bay where the trooper parked. They passed into a high-speed turbo lift, and Luke's stomach dropped as the lift rose. Stepping off the turbo lift, he found himself at the end of a long, straight hallway. Stormtroopers stood at every doorway, white-armored guardians. Luke strode past them, eyes forward, but Jedi senses on alert and one hand near his lightsaber. In a circular reception area, he spotted a man approaching up the far hallway. His erect posture and measured stride gave him away. Tall and pike thin, he exuded self-assurance. Narrow face and sparse curly hair confirmed Luke's guess. Luke walked to meet him. Commander Thanis.
Commander Skywalker.
Thanis peered down an Acklin nose.
This way, please.
He turned on one heel and sauntered back the way he had come. Luke steered the repulsor disc after Thanis. At the far end of the hallway, Thanis stepped into an office.
I will confess, Skywalker, I didn't expect you to come, he said when they were seated. I expected you to ask to meet me somewhere else.
Luke shrugged. This seemed practical.
True.
May I? Luke gestured toward R2 with the restraining bolt owner.
By all means.
Luke switched the little droid back on. R2's dome spun once, then came to rest. Why did the Emperor contact the Siruk? Luke began. Thanis scratched his neck, trying to look casual, but the stress lines around his eyes darkened.
If I knew, I would not be at liberty to tell you.
But you don't know. Thanis only stared back. We do need to discuss the current tactical situation, Luke suggested. The exchange was punctuated by frustrating dead ends, but when Luke stood up 2 hours later, he had a better grasp of the tactical situation and the enormous odds against the Alliance and the Bakurans. Precise data on orbital defense net vectors and a few miscellaneous tidbits stored in his mind and R2's memory banks.
Commander Skywalker, Thanis said softly, I wonder if you wouldn't favor me with a demonstration of that lightsaber. I've heard about them.
I think not. Luke kept his tone polite. I don't want to alarm your troopers.
They won't be alarmed.
Thanis touched another key on his desk. The door slid open. Two stormtroopers stepped inside.
I'd like to keep your astromech droid here. You two, take custody.
I'd prefer to keep R2 with me. Luke didn't think Thanis meant the threat seriously, but he unhooked and activated the saber with a single motion. For all his willingness to talk, Thanis thought like an Imperial. He wanted a demonstration. He'd get it. The troopers fired milliseconds apart. Luke pivoted into the blasts and deflected them. Tiny flames extinguished in Thanis' gray paneling.
Hold your fire!
Thanis lifted a hand.
Dismissed.
The troopers marched out.
I don't understand.
Luke kept the saber ignited.
You could have lost two of your men.
Thanis stared at the humming green blade.
I didn't think you would kill them. I'd have had to take you prisoner if you did. I wonder if you'd care to fight your way out through a whole garrison.
Luke reached for his focus of control.
If I had to, I would.
He sensed a trace of amusement in the older man. Perhaps Thanis was hostile more out of professional habit than out of real belief in the Empire, but Luke didn't trust him yet. He closed down the saber. I need to check on my forces ship's damages, Commander. I'd appreciate a lift over to the spaceport.
Thanis nodded. You may go. Take your droid with you.
He never could have admitted to young Skywalker how long he'd wished to see a lightsaber in action, thought Peter Thonis. Its combat uses would be limited, but its very appearance was compelling. As was the young man who carried it. Now he understood why the reward for his capture was so high. Thanis imagined what he could do with so many credits. He'd been transferred to this dead-end position after refusing to wipe out a village of recalcitrant Tult salt mine slaves back on Alzok III. He thought about that reward and early retirement. Dev knew he had to report to Elder Shtkith, the giant blue-scaled Siruk he called Bluescale, before his mid-cycle bath. Not that he wanted renewal, but if Bluescale thought Dev had avoided him, he'd pry deeper. Bluescale was incredibly sensitive to changes in Dev's scent. Besides, the Elder had a talent for hypnotic control, even though he was as force-blind as the rest of them. Dev ought to be able to resist him, for simple hypnosis was nothing next to the power of the Force. But he couldn't control it well enough, and he had no one to teach him. During the battle with the Imperials, Dev had felt the presence of one of his own kind. What if there really were a Jedi out there? The Siruk would be vitally interested, but Dev didn't want Bluescale to know yet. Walking lightly, he headed up a broad corridor of the ship. Siruk passed him, going in both directions. He found Bluescale in Master Fear Wurung's entechment hall. Bluescale stood in the corridor, giving orders to a group of Puweks. Dev stood back a respectful distance. Once the Puweks scurried away, he stepped close. "You wished me to report, Elder?" Bluescale opened a hatchway. "Come in." Dev stepped down into the enclosure.
What is it you wish? What may I do to please you?"
Bluescale bent his massive head closer to Dev and peered down with one eye.
"You are human. Think for a moment what that means."
Dev stared at his soft, fuzzy arm.
It means inferior."
"Are you certain?"
Bewildered, Dev shut his eyes. From the deepest recesses of emotion, he released something controlled and repressed and stinking and hateful, and the huge lizard loomed nearer. Dev howled and struck its forelimb.
"Harder. You can do better than that, weakling."
Gritting his teeth, Dev plunged a fist into its upper arm. "You killed my world, my parents, my people. Every one of them gone, absorbed, murdered, mutilated."
"Nothing new to be angry for?"
Dev raised his fists in front of his chest. The lizard bent closer and blew lizard stench at him.
"You'd like to poke at this eye, I'll guess."
Dev stared at the eye. It seemed to grow and surround him in blackness. It sucked him in. He fell into its depths, clutching the trailing edges of freedom. He tumbled. Horrified, he lay curled up on the cold gray deck tiles. He had abused Bluescale.
"Dev, you should never say things like that."
"I know."
Bluescale trilled a soft, throaty purr.
"Dev."
He looked up.
"We forgive you."
Dev sighed deeply.
"I angered you deliberately, Dev, to show you how close to the surface your temper lies. You must never show anger."
"I won't again. Thank you. I'm sorry."
"Dev, you were disturbed this afternoon during the battle. Why?"
Dev vaguely remembered that he'd hoped not to tell, but he couldn't remember why. The Siruk protected him and met all his needs. They gave him pleasure, even when he did not deserve it.
It was remarkable. The sense of another Force user close by.
This house was built by Captain Arden, the city's founder.
Prime Minister Jörg Kaptesson told the Alliance representatives they'd been invited to dine with him and Senator Belden at the Kaptesson's home. Luke looked down into the dining room made of vine-covered white stone walls. Blue-green water rippled beneath the room's transparent flooring. Underwater lights cast shadows of fish and an occasional snake-like creature. Force of habit made Luke probe the room for hostile intent. Halfway down the table, he sensed her. Senator Gariel Kaptesson. Or else there were two women on this planet who could electrify him without him meeting his eyes. She was already seated, facing away from the door. Madame Tyree Kaptesson swept into the room, swirled off her cape, and handed it to a servant as she appeared to walk on water. The Prime Minister escorted Leia to a spot next to himself along one side. Madame Kaptesson took the other chair on that end. Senator Orne Belden already sat next to her on that corner. "Just beyond him, dear," Madame Kaptesson told Chewbacca. She didn't share the Bakuran and Imperial prejudice against aliens. Luke grinned despite his distraction. Dear wasn't a term he'd have applied to a Wookiee.
"Nice job of work yesterday,"
the elderly man told Luke.
"My chance to thank you. We were ready to run for the hills when you arrived."
Han sat down next to Leia. That left Luke only one chair, just left of that glimmer in the Force.
"Our niece, Gariel, Commander," declared the Prime Minister.
Before Luke could even say hello, she turned to Chewbacca. "If you'd prefer to sit with your party, I'd be glad to trade places." Luke suggested subliminally to Chewie that he'd like to remain. Chewie responded to Gariel with a shake of his head. As conversation sprang up around the table, Luke turned towards her. Her eyes, one gray and one green, narrowed. "How do you do, Commander Skywalker?" "Well, it's been a long day," he answered quietly, damping down his awareness of the Force to keep the seductive savor of her presence from monopolizing his attention. The entrance of another group robbed him of the chance to say more. Flanked by a pair of troopers in black dress uniform, Governor Nereus strode to the third corner of the table and sat down. His troopers stepped into position behind him in unison, then stood at parade rest. When everyone else was engaged in conversation except Senator Gariel Kaptesson, Luke took a deep breath. Nothing risked, nothing gained. "You have some very strong preconceptions about Jedi," he said. Her mysterious eyes blinked. Shallow creases furrowed her forehead. "You see," he went on quickly, "this morning in the Senate chamber I was doing all I could to see who might be willing to work with the Alliance. I won't deny it." "I am a trained Imperial diplomat, Commander." She touched a cloth napkin to her mouth and glanced up the table toward Belden. "It's possible some of the others are rebellion sympathizers and misled." He definitely needed to talk with Senator Belden. "I spent 2 hours at the garrison this morning talking strategy with Commander Thanos. He has accepted our presence, temporarily. Can't you, for your people's sake?" "We are grateful to the Alliance for help." Deciding to stick with the direct approach, Luke said, "Perhaps you think I can read your mind, Senator Kaptesson. I can only sense your emotions, and only when I'm trying to. Most of the time, I live pretty much the way you do." "It's not that," she admitted. "I have religious difficulties with your kind." That caught him like a kick to the stomach. Ben and Yoda taught him that the Force embraced all religions.
"And the Alliance?"
"Forgive me if I seemed ungrateful. The Siruk have us terrified, but in the long run, accepting your help could lead to unpleasant repercussions." "Stick to small talk," Luke reminded himself. Servants brought in a main course of tiny green shellfish and buttery, unfamiliar vegetables served with bowls full of pale, blue-brown grain. She remained polite but distant until he asked as servants removed plates and bowls,
I like Senator Belden. Is he a friend of your family?"
"Yes, for years. Despite his oddities. Evidently a very close friend." Abruptly, Gariel's stiff upper lip guard melted away. She grasped a carafe that stood beside the centerpiece and poured a few pale orange drops into the tiny goblet in front of him. "Try that." Curious, he swirled the goblet. The liquid clung to the glass like syrup. He sipped. Liquid turned to fire. He caught its flavor like intoxicating jungle flowers mingled with the sweetest fruit he'd ever tasted. Her eyes sparkled. Obviously, she hadn't missed a nuance of his reaction.
What is it?
He cooled his mouth with a sip of water.
Nemana nectar, one of our chief exports.
I can understand why. Nemana fruit, she said, smiling, once processed, induces a faint sense of pleasure. Most people don't notice immediately. They just feel good without knowing why. Luke hoped his cheeks didn't look as warm as they suddenly felt. Still, Gariel seemed to have opened up.
I'm not supposed to ask you about rumors, she bent closer. But are you certain His Imperial Highness is dead?
Abrupt hostility grated at Luke from Gariel's right. Luke peered beyond her and saw Governor Nereus staring at him.
Jealous? He wondered. Could Nereus have designs on Gariel?
He spoke quietly.
The Emperor was strong in the Force. For one thing, I felt his death.
That was true as far as it went. To his surprise, she blanched deeply.
I hadn't known that about His Majesty.
Governor Nereus turned aside toward Chewbacca. Luke relaxed his guard.
It's not just Jedi, he murmured to Gariel. Your religion condemns anyone with a strong Force ability?
What would she say if she knew how the Emperor had nearly killed him?
Later, he told himself firmly,
alone. He imagined himself vindicating the Jedi and pointing the accusing finger squarely at her honored Emperor.
Now, just a minute.
Han's voice rose above the polite hum of dinner conversation. Governor Nereus pressed his forearms to the table and said,
I'm not accustomed to dining with aliens, General. Your Highness, Senator Organa, I question your good taste bringing a Wookiee to table tonight when Bakura is fighting for its very existence against aliens.
Excuse me, Han said in a decidedly unrepentant voice. My co-pilot doesn't want me to argue for his sake, but he said something you should all hear. It's humans your Saruk are after, you know. So even if they invade, Chewie is less at risk than the rest of us. They don't want Wookiees for their droid batteries. He says that if you needed somebody to carry messages out to their ships, he'd volunteer.
Oh, yes. What an excellent idea, General Solo. But Saruk's speech has never been translated, and I doubt that a Wookiee could duplicate it, since Wookiees have never even mastered human speech. Whistles, tweets, like a flock of birds. That's why we call them fluties.
Governor, Leia called from her end of the table, perhaps I might offer the service of my protocol droid, C-3PO. He knows over 6 million languages.
Send a droid and an alien to represent an imperial world? I think not.
Leia didn't answer.
One more thing. Anyone who tries to talk Bakurans into sedition, publicly or privately, will be arrested and expelled. Must I make myself clearer?
No, Governor. But I have a question for you. According to the recording you showed us in front of the Senate, the Saruk are here because your late Emperor invited them. How do you explain that?
Nereus raised his head.
I do not presume to second-guess the Emperor, Your Highness.
Luke caught a flash of insight.
Palpatine wanted battle droids of his own. They're more maneuverable than your TIE fighters, and far better shielded for their size.
As we've seen, said Leia pointedly, at close range. No one spoke for several seconds. Then conversations began to buzz again. They were halfway into dessert, something cold in a bowl with 6 nut-flavored layers, when a trooper strode in. The soldier touched Governor Nereus's shoulder and led him out a vine-covered arch.
What do you think that's about?
Luke murmured to Gariel. Her glance followed them.
We'll soon see.
The governor returned 5 minutes later, fairly blasting agitation and fear.
That was a personal communique from Admiral Prittick of the fleet.
Nereus' strident voice took on a knife edge.
His message confirms these rebels' claims. Emperor Palpatine is presumed dead.
Prime Minister Captison tipped his chair over as he sprang up.
Then there will be no help from the Empire.
Governor Nereus stared over the table at Luke. For once, Luke sensed no deceit. Despite his external composure, the man was frightened half to death. He turned to Leia.
Princess Leia, if your troops are willing to cooperate with mine, under truce, we need your help.
Leia's shoulders straightened.
An official truce?
Your Excellency?
As official as I can make it.
Dev tottered to his feet. He'd awakened on the deck of a round, uncomfortably warm cabin full of lights and mechanical sounds. This had to be the bridge. He was rarely allowed up here. Bridge security was supreme priority. But the Shriwer's captain and Admiral Ipikis hunched beside Bluescale. All three slowly blinked at him. Apparently, the presence of another force user mattered a great deal. He'd known that, and then forgotten it. What games were they playing with his mind?
Tell them what you told Elder Shtkith,
Master Fearwatering urged.
It felt like your mother's presence, but male.
Like, he said softly,
but different. Mother was not so strong.
Look at me.
Bluescale thrust his head forward. The beautiful eyes seemed to swirl. Up from a corner of Dev's mind bubbled a spring of excitement. This was his right mind. He loved them. Why, if the being is as strong as I believe, he could contact other humans, even from a distance. Fearwarung's massive V-marked head turned toward him.
That is an interesting idea. How far do you think?
Dev felt freshly energized. I don't know, but we were many light years away when I felt the Emperor's death for you.
True,
whistled Bluescale. He touched Fearwurung's shoulder scales. Fearwurung twitched his tail.
We might have to modify an apparatus. Yes, modify it to keep this strong one alive in a fully magnetized state, calling energies from outside.
Admiral Ifpicus's tail quivered too.
A pipeline to humans. We could own all known space, not merely this empire.
Catching their excitement, Dev interlaced his fingers and squeezed hard.
I observe, said Admiral Ipikis, the need for another shift in strategy. We must secure this strong one.
They spoke hurriedly among themselves. Ignored by Bluescale, Dev wilted. He could barely follow their speech. He had always been their special pet, their beloved human. Would they tail sweep him aside? He touched his throat. He might get his battle droid at last. But at what cost? They might entech him simply because they no longer needed him. He wanted his battle droid, but he craved their love. They turned around simultaneously. Fearwurung stroked Dev's arm, lovingly raising red welts.
Help us now. Stretch out to the unseen universe. Give us a name, a place. Help us find him.
Master, Dev whispered, will you always put me first?
Fearwurung stroked harder, bringing tears to Dev's eyes.
We have never doubted your devotion. Surely you don't mean to make us question it.
No, no.
Dev felt his face go pale. He had made Fearwurung his family, Fearwurung's cabin his home. He had given up his humanity. If Fearwurung replaced him, what was left? Bluescale lurched forward.
Dev Sivwara, we need your service as never before.
Dev couldn't tear his eyes off Fearwurung. The entechment chief had always implied that he loved Dev, but had he ever actually sang the word love? Shaken, Dev took a step backward. A Pawek wrapped brown foreclaws around Dev's shoulders and held him toward Bluescale. The elder lifted a hypo spray. They couldn't be doing this. The hypo spray wouldn't hurt much, but he remembered now what would follow. How could they be so unkind after all he had done? Recognition filtered up out of Dev's memory. They'd been unkind before. And before that, too. This was his right mind. This was Dev Sivwara, human, restored by touching the outsider. But he couldn't beat his master's drugs, nor Bluescale's direct domination. He was slipping. The hypo spray relaxed him as before, though he fought it for the sake of his secret. Fearwurung bent close.
Look outward, Dev. Serve us now. Where is this one? What is his name? How can we find him?
Firwurung's head blurred. Dev squeezed a salty river out of each eye. Then he closed out his grief and his awareness of the Shriwur's deck and escaped into the Force. He let the swirling universe carry him past his master's dim auras. The outsider felt as strong and as close as before, undeniably masculine and kindred, though a second diffuse feminine presence hung close by. The first one's sharply focused light almost washed out the second. An echo, perhaps, he didn't understand. All that he knew was that love and security came from Firwurung. He avoided touching the outsider's Force presence. "In the capital city," he murmured, half-conscious. "Salazar." An hour later, forgotten as Firwurung busied himself with schematic drawings, Dev curled up in the sleeping pit's warm center, filled with shame at what he'd done. How had his mother taught him to open contact? It had been 5 years. His ordeal had exhausted him. He wanted to lie still and fondle sweet memories of his real home. But he must try before Bluescale renewed him again, and there wasn't much time. He'd pay for this with the deepest renewal of his life, but he owed humankind one effort. He closed his eyes and emptied himself of hope, repentance, and bitterness. Fear wouldn't leave. It tinged his control, but he touched the Force through it. Almost instantly, he felt that brilliance. He flicked at its edge for attention, then formed an urgent warning in his mind. Luke flung thermal covers away into darkness. For a cold, sleepy instant, he couldn't remember what had awakened him. Then he recalled a dark, urgent sense of fear and warning. Humanity was in peril because of him. Dev rolled over in Firwurung's sleeping pit, clutching cushions. It was a Jedi out there. This time he'd felt the unmistakable, trained control, even when it was barely awakened. The hatch slid aside, and a massive blue shape appeared. Bluescale marched toward the bed pit.
"Admiral Intikis has conceived a new mission for our young human ally. He must be freshly renewed before it begins."
Firwurung blinked slowly.
"Then it is my honor to submit Dev to you."
Bluescale closed a massive foreclaw around Dev's right arm and yanked him upright.
"Are you awake, small thing?"
Dev blinked. The renewal was over. He lay on a warm, nubbly deck near a pair of massive, clawed hind feet. He knew that whistling song and the scent of that breath. A narrow-faced blue head bent close to him. He felt pristine and fresh, like a hatchling emerged from its egg.
"I have healed you," said
Dev, struggled to remember the name.
"Welcome back to full joy."
Dev reached up and wrapped his arms around Bluescale, and squeezed embarrassing moisture out of his eyes.
"Thank you. You now have only the thoughts, emotions, and memories that will strengthen you."
Bluescale crossed slender forearms over his chest. Dev inhaled deeply and gladly. "I feel so clean." He couldn't remember how Bluescale did this. He never could remember.
"Now we will go to Admiral Ifbikis."
"Yes, the mission." Bluescale had said there was a special mission for him, a supreme privilege for the sake of the Siruk Imperium. Dev walked beside the Elder. He had white eyes, furred skin, and a small, stinking, tailless body. Who was he to deserve such effort on the part of his beloved Siruvi? Such happiness in service. Such important life work. When 3PO wakened Leia early, she'd found a message from Luke. He'd taken Chewbacca to the spaceport to oversee ship repairs. She dressed hurriedly in the bathroom. Scurrying back out, she caught sight of a tall human standing against the wall. She gasped and stopped in mid-step. By dim room light, he glimmered faintly. Luke had said he sometimes saw Ben Kenobi like this. Backing away, she squinted. "Who are you? State your business."
"Do not fear me."
"Who are you?" The stranger stepped sideways into a darker spot where his glow brightened. He was tall, with a broad, pleasant face and dark hair.
"I'm your father, Leia."
"Vader." A chill started at her feet and shivered its way to her scalp. His very presence stirred every dark emotion she owned, fear, hatred.
Leia, do not fear me. I am forgiven, but I have much that I wish to atone for. I must clear your heart and your mind of anger. Anger is the dark side, too.
I want you to leave. The dark chill froze her voice.
Wait.
He did not move away from the wall. If anything, he seemed to shrink in size and proximity.
I am no longer the man that you feared. Can you not see me as a stranger, not an old enemy?
She had lived too long with the fear of Darth Vader.
You can't restore Alderaan, my home, and Bail Organa, who I will always think of as my true father. You can't bring back the people you murdered or comfort their widows and orphans. You can't undo what you did to the Alliance.
Old pain jabbed her like a fresh wound.
I strengthened the Alliance, although that was not my intent.
He extended a glimmering arm. The mellow voice sounded wrong. The mild, naked face didn't look as if it had hidden for decades behind a black breath mask.
Leia, things are changing. I may never be able to return to you.
Good.
There is no justifying my actions. Yet your brother saved me from darkness. You must believe me.
I heard Luke.
She crossed her arms and clenched her hands around her elbows. But I'm not Luke, or your teacher, or your confessor. I'm only your daughter by a cruel trick of fate.
Of the Force. Even that served a purpose. I am proud of your strengths. I do not ask for absolution, only your forgiveness.
She swallowed. Her throat felt dry.
I can almost forgive you torturing me.
He bowed his head.
And the evils you did to other people, because those drove so many worlds into the Alliance. But cruelty to Han, no. If you want to go through me, you won't get his forgiveness, never.
The figure shrank farther away.
Never is too large a word.
Darth Vader lecturing her about virtue and eternity? I will never forgive you. Dematerialize, go away.
She rushed out of the bedroom. Morning light streamed through the main room's long window. Han pushed up out of a corner lounge pit.
You're going to be late, Highnessness.
Leia's stomach hurt. I just saw Vader.
Oh, you're seeing things too now. What do you want?
You're going to love this. To apologize.
Yeah, she said.
My sentiments exactly.
You know, you've been jumping at everything that reminded you of him. Now you've faced him down. Maybe the worst is over.
It's not. She let her shoulders sink. Han, he's still here. I'm...
Unable to finish the sentence, she shut her eyes.
So what? Hey, nobody gets to be as big a deal with the Empire as he was without a lot of strengths and abilities. You got him. You're just using him differently.
How could he be so insensitive? Thanks a lot, Han. She considered taking a swing at him.
Go away.
All right, okay, I can take a hint.
Glaring, Han stalked around the lounge pit.
Han, wait. What had she done?
He almost reached the main door.
Han, it's the Vader in me. I can't help what I am.
As the impact of what she'd said flooded through her, Han stopped beside the black console. He turned slowly.
No. It's the Skywalker in you.
That name, Luke's name, didn't raise her hackles the same way. A fleeting thought flashed through her mind. What had Vader been like before he was Vader?
I'll tell you one thing. Han walked up to the edge of the lounge pit. Governments need each other. Yeah. Planets do. Species do. But so do people.
Governments? She was going to be late for breakfast with the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
She paced back to his side.
Right.
Anyway, he's gone. He didn't hurt me. Maybe he can't hurt me anymore.
Now that'd be good.
Han ran a finger around the tight braids pinned to her head.
I love you.
She held her lips near his chin. Accepting the invitation, he bent and kissed her. She felt her life energy draw up into the kiss until nothing existed but barely perceptible movements of Han's mouth. Her pulse quickened in her ears.
It was the comm center behind Han.
I think I'm in trouble.
Leia tried stretching out for him. What she touched frosted her blood. His deeper sense hid a dark disquiet. Luke, what's wrong?
Come on, Leia. This isn't a secure channel.
Well, then it has to be later, Leia said. Han and I have to go straight from here to the Prime Minister. I'm also taking him 3PO and R2 to try translating.
Good. R2's probably still in my bedroom, plugged in. Han, I'm leaving Chewie at the spaceport to keep things calm. I'll try to talk to Belden next, if I can find him.
Belden?
The senior senator. I have a feeling. I'll see you two later.
Of all the people they had met on Bakura so far, Senior Senator Belden seemed most sympathetic to the Alliance. Perhaps he could help Luke find sanctuary. Luke took a speeder and drove it out the spaceport's perimeter road. 5 minutes later, he parked atop a residential tower. He found Senator Belden's apartment near the turbo lift. He ran a hand over his hair and straightened his gray shipsuit, then touched the alarm panel. The door slid aside. He stepped back. Garryl, here too? Hello, I was hoping to speak with Senator Belden. He's out. A cracked voice behind her called,
Let him in, Gary, let him in.
That's Madam Belden, and she's not well. Garryl touched her forehead. Come in for a moment. Cliss, her caregiver, had a family crisis, so I'm sitting with her this morning.
In the living room, a wizened woman sat propped up on cushions in a brocade chair with wing-shaped armrests.
You're back, Ravidan. Why did you stay away so long?
Luke shot Gary a puzzled glance. She thinks you're their son. He was killed in the purges 3 years ago. She thinks every young man is their son. Don't argue. It's better.
Hesitantly, Luke took Madame Belden's hand. I'm sorry. So much work to do for the rebellion, you know. She squeezed his hand.
I knew you were working undercover somewhere, Ravidan.
Then she shook her head helplessly.
I'm...
She shut her eyes and set her chin. Garryl shrugged. You're fine, Epi. Would a nap feel good?
Nap.
How long has she been like this?
3 years. Gary shook her head sadly. Unfortunately, she was deeply involved in resistance to the Empire. She broke down when Ravidan died. It destroyed her. Madame Belden thrashed in her chair.
Don't leave without saying goodbye.
Luke knelt beside her. He cleansed his mind of concern and desires and focused inward, examining her deep presence. It pulsed too powerfully for someone who needed full-time care. The mind remained, affecting the force, creating a life pulse so strong that Luke guessed she had untrained strength of her own. But some of the links connecting mind to senses had been severed. The Empire did this, he guessed. He blinked up into sad, watery eyes. Garryl was watching him from behind. If he used the Force, she might throw him out, or she might begin to respect his abilities. Regardless of what Garryl wanted, Epi Belden needed healing. Luke stroked the spotted, bony hand. I want to show you something. If you can do this, you may be able to heal yourself. Her sense brightened and became eager. No, no. Be calm and still. Listen deep. He pressed into her awareness and showed her how he had healed himself traveling in hyperspace. Then he turned her focus inward. Something has been damaged, he told her. I think the Empire did it. Find it. Heal it. Fight back, Epi. May the Force be with you. A wave of her gratitude washed him out of her mind.
What did you do? Garryl demanded.
Well, I know a little about self-healing. I showed her something she might try, that's all.
Is that so little for you? She asked bitterly.
A non-Jedi couldn't do that much. I did nothing to her. My word is as an honorable man. She shrugged, dismissing the matter.
Come out here. Sit down.
She strode through a door arch into a white-tiled dining room. She motioned him to a seat at a transparent table.
If you can do so much with the Force, why don't you simply get into a fighter, blast your way onto the Saruvi flagship, and get rid of them?
I might try it if you told me to. Luke sighed away the impulse and explained, "If I used my powers in anger or aggression instead of for knowledge and defense, the dark side would take me. It took..." He strangled a terrible temptation. Someday he must admit his ancestry. He almost wished he had it over with, but the proper time hadn't yet arrived. Telling Gariel would be disastrous. It took many Jedi. They became agents of evil and had to be hunted down. "I should have guessed." Gariel looked him up and down, then cocked an ear toward the open door. He might yet win her through Epi. If she tries what I showed her, she might seem to sleep for, well, days.
That might be a blessing. What did you need to talk with Orn about?
He glanced out a broad window. The morning sun was turning brilliant, but he felt chilly. He'd been warned. Somewhere out there, the Saruk would soon be looking for him. He needed help. But being here, he was endangering Gariel and Madame Belden. He stood up. I hope Madame Belden improves. What I sensed underneath her troubles, I think I would have liked her. She was a fighter, wasn't she?
Gariel's left eyebrow arched.
Great. He'd reminded her of his Jedi abilities again.
Luke, thank you for trying. Luke. She finally used my name.
He hurried back to the roof port with a lighter heart.
"I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication, sir."
Leia had heard that sentence so many times she'd forgotten how impressive it was. Prime Minister Captison's sudden interest reminded her. Now Captison touched a panel on his desktop console.
"Zilpha, key in those ship-to-ship recordings we picked up from the Fluties."
A light changed color beside Captison's elbow.
"Here we go. Have your droid listen to this."
You can talk to him directly," Leia put in. "His full designation is C-3PO, and he answers to 3PO.
"All right," said Captison. "Listen, 3PO. Tell me what they're saying."
The Flutie played a very large instrument. 3PO's head cocked. He shook it.
I'm sorry, Prime Minister, but I can make nothing of it. It is entirely outside my comprehension."
Han, sitting next to Leia, rubbed his chin. Leia couldn't think of what to say. From behind her came a whistling echo. Leia spun around. R2 stood in a corner, warbling what seemed to be a perfect imitation of Prime Minister Captison's recording. 3PO, isn't that exactly how the Siruk sounded?
No. He missed one note by a full 4 vibrations. Oh, soak your own transistors. I won't stand for that language.
Captison raised a white eyebrow.
He can duplicate them that closely?
I wouldn't doubt R2, though it never occurred to me that he'd be able to do that. Sir, I'm certain that given enough time and recordings, 3PO can make a solid effort at decoding that language.
Well, if he can, we've got a native speaker if we need one. Take your metal friends to my aide's office. Zilpha will set them up with enough recordings to keep them busy well into tomorrow night.
Governor Wylek Nereus bit the end off a twist of Namana candy and chewed thoughtfully. In this cool greenway, lined with tall fern trees and passion-bud vines, he could momentarily ignore the menace surrounding Bakura and ponder his own career. With both Palpatine and Vader dead, the Rebel Alliance, down-talked so disdainfully on all official communiques, became rather more of a threat. Still, all odds favored the Empire, and he had two high Rebel leaders within striking distance. He could weaken the Alliance substantially. Then he must watch for a new Emperor to emerge, flatter and praise him, and meanwhile make Bakura a shining example of pacified, profitable enterprise. If the Siruk didn't take it away. He despised them on principle. As a youth, he'd pursued two hobbies, alien parasitology and alien dentition. The Empire had quietly used both talents. Aliens were creatures to dissect or fight, not to ally with.
"Sir,"
an aide came up and saluted,
"you have a personal message waiting on Hollow from the Siruk fleet."
On the holonet reception pad in Nereus's broad-windowed office, a green light blinked. A meter-high translucent figure appeared over the reception grid, human in striped white robes. "Governor Nereus." The figure bowed at its waist.
Perhaps you remember me. I'm...
Deb Sivwara,
Nereus growled. Now that was an alien parasite.
I know you as well as I want to. What joyful news do you have this time?
Sivwara shook his head. Less joyful than before, I fear, but perhaps in the short run it will please you better. The mighty Suruk, seeing your hesitancy to join the Imperium's quest for galactic unity, to experience freedom from physical limitations... Nereus snatched a long ivory Luelkan tooth off a pile of flimsies.
Make your point.
Sivwara extended one palm. Admiral Ifpikis is willing to move our fleet out of your system, if you'll grant us one boon.
Keep talking.
Nereus fingered the tooth's slashing edge. If the hollow had been flesh, he could have sliced it just so. Among the new visitors in your system is a man named Skywalker. If you can hand him over to a special Suruvi delegation, we will leave immediately. Luke poked several buttons but couldn't work the apparatus that scrutinized callers at his quarters. He hustled through the common room and answered the door. Gariel carried a tightly woven string satchel against her blue skirt, and, as before, her very presence made his force sense tingle. Commander, may I speak with you for a few moments? Luke backed away from the inquisitive glances of the Imperial guards who had been stationed at the apartment. Please. Once the door shut, she cupped her hands around her mouth and whispered,
You're monitored. We're about to disappear.
She lifted the satchel and held it open. Inside was a gray box. She toggled a large switch.
Disruption bubble generator. I can't leave it on for more than a few seconds at once. You're in danger. A friend in Governor Nereus's office tells me that the governor has been approached by the Suruk.
She slid her hand back into the satchel. Is your party comfortable here, Commander? He had to think quickly.
The situation's a little awkward. I have an allergic reaction to stormtrooper armor.
Good, she mouthed. She twisted her wrist again. Naturally, Nereus is tempted?
I don't think so. He's not stupid. If they want you alive, he's going to make sure they don't get you that way. She glanced down and moved her hand again.
The accommodations are excellent, though.
Luke motioned toward a corner lounge.
I've been on my feet all day. Please, sit down so I can.
I don't think I should. He overlaid his voice with a calming veneer of force overtones.
I wish you would trust me.
I suppose my reaction to Jedi is like yours to stormtroopers. She worked the generator again. They wouldn't come after you the way they'd grab one of us plain folks, you know. Neither will Governor Nereus. Watch your back. Watch what you eat and drink and breathe. She started pacing the room, then glanced over at him.
Are you listening to me, think?
Her string bag lay on the repulsor lounge.
I can't do that, he said carefully.
Some of your feelings come through the Force, but that's all.
That's still not fair. I can't tell what you're feeling.
Luke slid out the gray box and found the control.
Would you like to know what I'm feeling?
Yes.
He drew a deep breath. Honesty was one thing, stupidity another. He wished he had Leia's gift for turning a phrase.
I already know you on a deeper level than anyone else does. Of course, that makes it worse, because all you know about me is what you think you believe.
Had he said that right?
He plowed on.
Your feelings are strong for me, strongly ambivalent.
She sat in a lounge pit.
You'd better turn that back off for a few seconds, or we'll both be in trouble.
Quickly, he switched the field off.
How long have you been a senator?
Surely that could be considered casual conversation.
The Senate elected me 5 years ago. I've been in school ever since, either here or off-planet at Imperial Center. Does it always rain this much? I was raised on a desert world.
After a few more non-committal comments on the weather, the door chimed. Gary sprang up and opened it, grateful for the distraction. One of her personal staff pushed a hover cart through the door. Gary motioned for the staffer to park it between their chairs. Once he had gone, she uncovered the single plate.
I hope you like seafood. It smells very fresh. If you don't mind, I'll join you.
She took a few delicate bites. Then he ate the rest like a starving man. Luke turned the generator back on.
The Suruk are out there.
He gestured with his fork. Once I settle with them, I'll come back to talk with you, Gariel. If there's any hope that you'd reconsider about me, about Jedi. Think of it this way, he murmured, scraping the last morsel off his plate. There will always be people who are strong for evil. If the only way to protect others is for a few of us to become strong in the Force for good, isn't that important?
Almost persuaded, she resisted his seeming genuineness. The cosmos must balance.
I agree. The dark side calls constantly for aggression, revenge, betrayal. The stronger you become, the more you're tempted.
He glanced down at the generator and raised an eyebrow.
It wasn't on too long. We could easily have been eating in silence.
She reached into the satchel, twisted her wrist, then slipped the bag over one shoulder. We will work together against the Siruk. He made a hand-twisting motion. She switched on the generator one last time. Is there a chance I could buy a few of those? She shook her head. This is Epi's. There are only a few of them left on Bakura, property of the original families. We've kept them secret from Governor Nereus. Dev stroked the sleek new entechment chair. Or should he call this something else? This one was special. More of an upright bed than a chair, it reclined from 0 to 30 degrees. Instead of a catchment arc, it had inbuilt energy-attracting circuitry that would lie under Skywalker's back. Larger restraints stood open along its sides and near its foot, and other medical attachments ensured the long-term survival of an occupant. All silver and black, it glistened under brilliant cabin lights.
It's beautiful, Master Fear Wurung.
I'm sorry, Dev.
Fear Wurung sang low.
I know this will hurt your feelings.
I wish it were real, Master, but I know you need to test it. Let's begin.
Fear Wurung nodded his huge, V-crested head. Cautiously, Dev backed up to it. His left foot brushed an open binder. It snapped shut around his ankle.
It works.
After he was strapped in, Fear Wurung touched a red panel. Something stung the small of Dev's back.
That works, too.
That mechanism was critical for long-term confinement, as was the upper spine beamer. Now the procedure would not depend on disabling Skywalker's nervous system first.
Can you move your feet?
Dev peered down. The angle of tilt held them off the gray deck tiles.
I can't even feel them.
Bluescale and Admiral Ifpicus strode in, followed by two Poeks, who dragged a limp human prisoner by his head and arms. That was the one who'd actually be intact.
A review for me,
demanded the Admiral.
How will this differ from standard entechment?
Fear Wurung pressed foreclaws together in front of his chest.
We believe that a force-talented individual will be able to draw energy from a distance, a short distance in Dev's case. If Dev is properly linked to catchment circuitry, the other subject's energies will flow through him, but Dev will remain unintact and will be able to repeat the procedure indefinitely. Not like the chair, then?
If Pickus glanced at it.
No. The actual subject need not be caught. In Skywalker's case, the subject will not even need to be within the range of a tractor beam. Or so we hope.
But for convenience sake, we have caught and prepared this one. Is everything ready?
Bluescale asked.
It is.
Fear Wurung pulled the main switch, and the servo pumps injected not simple magsol, but a solution of magsol and other factors. It should orient the entire nervous system toward the bed's inbuilt catchment circuit.
I feel, Dev said, as if every nerve in my body were being tugged toward the focus point. It hurts a little.
Fear Wurung turned his right eye toward Dev.
Are you ready to try funneling this human's energies into a battle droid?
I'll try.
The next best thing to entechment might be granting that gift to someone else. Dev shut his eyes and reached down past the discomfort for his center of control. Deeply and humbly aware of his limitations, he flailed through the force toward the other human presence. It seemed like forever before he touched and embraced it. Letting the catchment pull through him, he used the force to suck its energy into himself. For an instant, he felt huge and heavy. Twice as much pain pulsated in his nerves. Then the extra weight vanished. Panting, He opened his eyes wide. The prisoner lay limp on the deck. Governor Wilek Nereus marched into the operations room of his suite, firmly controlling a sense of anticipation. At the short black conference table standing across from Commander Thanos and beside the smuggler Solo, he found Commander Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight, self-assured in his invulnerability.
"Is everything going well, gentlemen?"
Nereus took the repulsor chair at the table's head and waved his bodyguards back. The others sat down.
"Our fighters are repaired," said Thanos. "The crews stand ready for our signal."
That attack would not come if the Suruk kept their word. Not that Nereus expected them to. If they took Skywalker and attacked anyway, he and Commander Thanos had brought onto line a new weapon that should take a heavy toll on battle droids.
"What about that new ship-mounted, temp gun? It disables droids at some distance using electromagnetic pulse," Thanos explained. "We've installed 2 prototype super temps on system patrol craft, but they're untested."
Solo immediately requested demp guns for rebel gunboats. Nereus stroked his chin and let Commander Thanos explain that no others existed. A holographic projector whirred up to table level, creating an image mid-table between Skywalker and Thanos. Surrounding a pale blue sphere, silver and gold ship dots mapped out Bakura's defensive web. Farther out, the red Suruk glimmered. After they had discussed possible maneuvers for 2 hours, Skywalker folded his hands on the table. "I think we can confirm it. Alliance forces will spearhead each thrust."
"Destroy one cruiser and we might change their minds. Destroy 2?
He trailed off.
"Well, we'll see what they actually throw at us. One more question," Skywalker addressed Commander Thanos. "If the Suruk go on waiting for us, how long do we keep them waiting?"
Nereus cleared his throat.
"Tomorrow evening," he said.
"By then, young Jedi, you'll be dead."
"I'd like to move sooner,"
Thanos said carefully.
"The element of surprise will work in favor of the attacking..." "Tomorrow evening," Nereus said.
Luke felt Governor Nereus's stare as he and Han strode out of the ops room. Nereus expected never to see him again. Once they passed the first corner, Han muttered, "You have got to be kidding, trusting those people?" Luke answered out of one side of his mouth, "Reconsider Commander Thanos."
"Oh?"
Han raised one eyebrow, then turned his head aside to stare down the corridor. "Good, they both better stay jumpy."
"Straightforward,"
said Luke. "Wants to do a good job and is glad for help. He's not Nereus's man."
"Empire's man."
They slowed at the edge of a wide lobby. Luke reached out through the force. No one waited there. Han kept one hand near his blaster as they hurried across. Once they left the Imperial office's corridor, Han frowned.
"Is it my imagination, or are you being just a little more careful than yesterday?"
"I had word from an inside source that Governor Nereus plans to hand me to the Suruk."
"Yeah?" said Han. "Finally gonna be careful, huh?"
"I've been careful." Luke clapped his shoulder. All they'd been through had already bonded them like brothers. "Now this." Once they reached the apartment, Han disappeared into his room. Luke hastily encoded a message to Wedge Antilles out in the orbital net. "Attack coordinated for tomorrow night. Work with Governor Nereus's forces. Follow Thanos' orders, but keep your deflector shields up." Smiling grimly, he sent it. Han and Leia were headed for the Falcon as soon as he located her. She'd gone off alone after breakfast, but with the attack this imminent, it was time to stand ready. Luke would catch the next shuttle to orbit and reboard the flurry. His stomach grumbled a more immediate message. He ought to catch lunch, but not here. The food at the cantina at Pad 12, where the flurry was docked, should be non-toxic. "You ready, Han?" Han stepped back out.
"Leia's not answering."
"Well, maybe she and Captison went someplace where the Imperials couldn't listen to them."
"Yeah, possible. Let's get you to the troops, then I'm going to look for her."
Prime Minister Captison had suggested a drive, and to Leia's surprise, Senior Senator Orne Belden climbed aboard with a bulging breast pocket. Captison's liveried chauffeur steered a closed cockpit government speeder off the roof port. Belden laid a finger across his lips. Leia nodded, understanding. No talking yet. 5 minutes later, Captison's chauffeur landed the speeder at a small dome surrounded by gaudy repulsor signs that hovered several meters overhead. Leia reached for the entry hatch. Captison laid a hand over hers.
Wait,
he said softly. 10 minutes after that, Captison's chauffeur and bodyguard took off again in the government speeder, while Leia stepped into the front passenger seat of a small rental craft. Do you do this often? She asked, amused but pleased by their subterfuge.
Never done it before.
Captison steered out into traffic.
It was Belden's idea.
It's safe to assume that the speeder pool's not secured for talking.
The senior senator leaned forward between them and patted his bulging breast pocket.
This will help, too. We are now inaudible.
He told her about the generator.
Gentlemen, I'd be intrigued to know why the Empire hasn't pushed Bakura into the Alliance camp.
Well, Nereus has been subtle, I suppose,
guessed Captison,
applying pressure slowly.
Is there an underground, Senator Belden?
Officially, no.
100 members? 10 cells?
close enough.
If you could choose freely and without risk to your people, which side would you wish Bakura to support?
The Alliance,
Captison admitted.
We're displeased with Imperial taxation, with off-world rule, and sending our young men and women into Imperial service. But we are afraid.
Senator Belden, give your people a chance to fight for their freedom, and they'll...
Out of long habit, Leia glanced back over her shoulder. A double-podded local patrol craft followed 10 lengths back.
Those are Imperials behind us, I think.
Captison checked a sensor screen and pushed his throttle forward.
But the Imperials were faster.
They brought Leia, Belden, and Captison to Nereus, who ordered them placed under arrest.
Prime Minister Captison, an admitted droid hater, simply has to agree that we serve a useful purpose now. We've been on the job for 7 hours without so much as a break for lubricants.
Threepio leaned his head closer.
Quiet, R2. There's something different on top of this one.
R2's automatic scanners compared the code with millions of others.
Oh, no. R2, you must call Master Luke at once. This is dreadful.
Han had just dropped Luke off at the spaceport cantina to wait for the Flurry shuttle and was heading away in the Falcon when a glimmering face appeared in midair over his head-up city map.
Alert all residents. A curfew has just been imposed. Security forces will shoot to kill leaders and stun their followers to incarcerate them. This follows the arrests of Prime Minister Captison and Senior Senator Orn Belden on suspicion of subversion, along with rebel leader Leia Organa.
Han streaked to a landing on the Bakur complex's roof port, then took the nearest turbolift down. As usual, 2 stormtroopers stood guard outside his apartment. Their helmets swiveled as he strode inside past them. They probably didn't mean to let him back out. 3PO stood inside, waiting with infinite mechanical patience.
General Solo, thank goodness you've come. Senator Captison returned me here, but she took R2 to her office. His restraining bolt...
Not now. Find Leia.
But, General, the Siruk are coming for Master Luke, and then attacking immediately.
Han skidded to a halt halfway across the common room.
Wait, did you say attacking?
Within an hour. We must...
How do you... No, it'll keep... Oh, where's Leia?
The droid punched numbers at the console and was soon able to report that Leia had been flown to a small installation in the nearby mountains.
Han drew his blaster and stalked toward the door. Let's go, Goldenrod. We gotta get past 2 stormtroopers.
Sir, take a minute to plan this once. Minimize your risks.
Han hesitated.
Minimize? How?
Instead of blasting your way out, you might attempt a deception of some sort.
Han had to admit the droid was right. Less than a minute later, he sent the glide door open and stood back. 3PO fled into the lobby, screeching gibberish, waving both arms and swaying violently back and forth. With the stormtroopers distracted by the spectacle, Han shot them, his blaster on stun. Out of respect for Leia's wishes, he told himself. Having stolen an Imperial speeder, Han streaked out of the city and dropped low over the western river, keeping low enough to catch fish, and spitting distance from the huge white cliff on his right, hopefully evading surveillance. He waited until the foothills looked tall enough to offer some cover. Then he zipped across the river and up a small tributary stream. It didn't take him long to spot his target, an ancient T-shaped log building with a dark green stone roof. Inside, only one door stood closed on the main hallway, with a skinny security droid sitting beside it like an extra doorpost. Obviously, the Imperials didn't bother to humor Bakuran anti-droid sentiments here at their private installation. Han leveled his blaster at the droid's midsection and fired.
Minimum security, Han observed. A little too convenient. If this was another trap...
They'd deal with it. 3PO ought to be back at the Falcon by now.
Leia?
He called softly into the darkened suite.
It's me.
Lights came on. Hey! Her voice came from above. She stood perched on the seat of a repulsor chair directly over the doorway. Good thing you spoke up. I almost flattened you. Gariel stood outside Epi Belden's door and straightened her freshly pruned bundle of cloudberry spikes. Each fragrant blossom could have produced a succulent fruit, but too many spikes on a vine made the fruit tiny and sour. The symbolism, some blossoms, some lives, cut off to allow a few to grow stronger, gave her small comfort. Would Epi understand that her husband for over a century had died in Governor Nereus's custody? Or would he return again and again in her perception, like Ravadan? In Orne Veldon's office, a work screen silhouetted a small, hunched figure.
Epi?
The figure turned around. Epi Belden's wrinkled face glowed with the intensity of a small bird's.
You know anyone else who's likely to be here? She's been like that all morning.
Cliss, Epi's caretaker, stood at the door.
Go on in. She's been asking for you. And for that young man...
Epi paddled her repulsor chair away from the work screen.
Who was he?
He's a rebel, but a dangerous one. A Jedi. One of them.
Oh-ho!
Epi's feet swung under her chair.
Our teachers have taught us a lot of wisdom down the years, but also a load of guff.
Epi, you're well.
You're here to tell me about Orne, aren't you?
The wall of her preoccupation thinned, and Gary glimpsed her fresh grief. Full realization hadn't set in. Epi was working while she could, the better to grieve later.
Thank you anyway, love. I heard. No one else thought to notify me, but I've been plugged in all morning. Let the Imperials call it a cerebral hemorrhage, but I know he died for Bakura.
She spun her repulsor chair and touched the workstation control. A screen full of symbols translated itself into a news media picture.
Fires and strikes and running street battles in Salisdar. Oh, I wish I were 80 again.
Epi, what did you do?
Only what that young man... that terribly dangerous young Jedi showed me to do.
Gary reached out a hand.
You're going to wear yourself out. Shouldn't you lie down for a bit?
Epi shook her head.
I've missed years. Can't waste minutes now. Bakura's rising. I want to be in on it.
Gariel steadied herself.
Rising?
Against Nereus, of course.
But we need Governor Nereus and his forces. We're going to be invaded any minute. If we fight each other now, the Siruk will have us piecemeal.
That's why it can't be done wrong. Those people on the streets are only the distraction. You and I and a few others on the inside will run the real rebellion. We could accomplish plenty before the aliens actually attacked.
Gary gaped at the thought. How could you even consider collaborating with Epi and the rebels? The alliance was impractical, naively idealistic. But she loved Bakura, not the Empire.
I'm with you, she said softly. Gariel flew her air car back to the complex, dodging security patrols, and ran to her office. The rebel's droid, R2-D2, stood right where she'd left it, beside her desk, spinning its dome and beeping unintelligibly. Now that she could think of trying to free Uncle Yorg, she realized that she knew only one person who could possibly help. She bent close to the droid.
She felt ludicrous talking to it. R2-D2, can you help me locate Commander Skywalker?
Luke glanced one last time at the spaceport cantina's cracked chrono. In 5 minutes, if his shuttle hadn't arrived, he'd join Chewie on the Falcon. Quick footsteps approached along the wall outside. Alarmed, he reached out through the Force, so he felt Gariel before the main door swung open. She hurried through, followed by R2. She explained what had happened and begged his help.
Let's have R2 try to find your uncle. Can you interface the governmental mainframe from a public comnet?
I should be able to. Luke suddenly motioned for silence. A vague sense of aggression arose in the kitchens. Almost instantly, it resolved into three distinctly alien presences, and one that mystified him. Human, but alien-scented. He drew his blaster and flipped the grip toward Gary.
Can you shoot? There are Saruk in the building. I'm sorry I can't help your uncle now.
She closed her hand around the blaster uncertainly.
Have R2 get word to the Flurry up in orbit and tell them what's happening. Then find your uncle. Get out of here. Now.
The front and side doors blew open simultaneously. The muzzle of a heavy blaster rifle appeared through each one, then a white-armored stormtrooper. This time Luke guessed they weren't on his side. He seized Gariel's shoulders and swept her behind him. The handful of Bakurin customers dove under tables. Three Saruk pushed through the kitchen door, large, smooth-scaled creatures with long, muscular tails to balance massive upper bodies. Two of different sizes were glossy brown, one intense blue. The heads looked bird-like with huge, toothy beaks and all-black eyes. Each wore a shoulder bag slung across its body under one forelimb. They towered over the frightened service staff. A human in striped robes stepped around the counter after the aliens.
"Fortunate one," he hailed Luke. "You are the Jedi, Skywalker. I will translate for you."
Luke recognized Deb Siwara from the hologram recording. He focused deep into the Force, drawing on all Yoda had taught him. He was at peace. He was peace.
"You are to be the guest of Admiral Iphpikis, as you begin a new kind of life you have only dreamed of before. Give my companions your weapon, and come gladly with me."
Luke recognized him a second time. This boy had also sent the dream warning. "Thank you for your invitation. I would rather stay here. Ask your masters to sit down. We will talk."
"They do not sit, my friend. We would be honored to accept your companion, too, as our guest, but you must hurry."
Gary's cheeks whitened as the blue alien stumped forward, but she held her ground. It reached a clawed forelimb toward her shoulder. Something black slithered out of its nostrils. She gasped and brought up Luke's blaster.
"Get away from her!"
The alien's head turned and the nose tongues flicked toward him. The eye seemed to swirl like a dark storm, sucking at his will. Unquestionably, this one or another like him kept Dev Siwara leashed. R2 rocked back and forth, chirping electronic fury. Luke wondered what he was telling the Saruk. Luke called to the troopers,
"You have no business with this woman. It's me they want. Let her leave."
"The Flutties want her," answered a trooper. "This time the Flutties get what they want."
Luke ignited his lightsaber and got a solid two-handed fighting grip.
"Not necessarily."
Four blast rifles leveled at him, black holes framed by white helmets. Luke crouched and turned his body sideways, presenting a smaller target. Gary dropped prone. The troopers opened fire. Luke stretched deep into the Force. He felt his body whirl and his saber leap and vaguely sensed energy bolts splashing on gritty cantina walls. He eased closer, dodging tables toward a point between his attackers. Suddenly, the blast stopped coming as the Imperials realized they were sighting past Luke at each other. He stretched out with the Force, touched two hostile minds, and leapt. Blue-white stun bolts crackled through the air beneath him. Troopers dropped on both sides. Luke spun back toward the aliens. He coughed, then caught his breath.
"R2!"
he shouted.
"Get her out of here! Get help!"
R2 rolled toward Gariel. She lurched up to her hands and knees and edged toward the front door. Luke stepped sideways.
"Dev, warn them I can't stun them with a lightsaber. I'll have to kill them if they come at me."
"You mustn't. If they die here away from a consecrated world, it is eternal tragedy."
The alien sighted on him.
Gary had crawled closer to the door, but not close enough. They'd get her unless he attacked first. The aliens carried paddles, which one now raised. A thin silver beam shot out of its narrow point.
Confidently, Luke stepped toward the beam and swung his saber into it.
It didn't deflect. It only bent slightly. Before he could react, the beam swept through him. It left his midsection tingling.
Relieved that it didn't do worse, he adjusted his grip on the lightsaber. The second alien moved out from behind the first and added his beam, aiming low, shooting for his legs. He pivoted aside. One beam snapped off, the other tracked him, closing.
Big Blue stepped to one side and projected a beam down the room's central aisle, cutting Luke's space in half.
No!
Gary shot at the blue alien but missed. The alien trained its beamer at her. Silver light illumined the hollow of her throat. She gave a little cry, crumpled, and lay still.
Luke charged the small V-crested brown alien and swung his saber at its mysterious weapon. The alien lost a foreclaw with his paddle beamer. Fluting wildly, spun away from Luke.
Don't!
Dev wrung his hands.
Don't harm them!
The larger brown stomped toward him, muscular legs pumping like pistons. Luke flung the saber in a long spinning arc. The big brown Siroop fell headless as the saber spun back into Luke's hand.
Stop!
Weeping, Dev dashed toward the fallen alien. Big Blue projected his beam through Luke again, or rather where Luke had been. Luke somersaulted over the beam, thrust out a hand, and tried to wrest the weapon away. That pulled the Siroop's forelimb toward him. The beam focused at the top of Luke's right leg. It collapsed, nerveless. Staggering, Luke tried to jump backward. He struggled to balance, to regain full control of the force. The weapon scrambled nerve centers then. Gary was probably unconscious.
R2, drag her out of here!
R2 reached Gary, seized her by her belt, and dragged her toward the front door. Luke hopped crookedly onto the nearest orange tabletop. His numb right leg twisted as his full weight landed on it. He had to use the force to stay upright.
R2's shrill whistle spun Luke around. Dev aimed an Imperial blaster upward at his body, a classic stun shot.
Luke loosened one hand from his saber and force-yanked the blaster from Dev's hand. It sailed to him with slow grace. Easily, he spun and sliced. Two halves of the weapon clattered onto the table.
Now, urged his inner sense.
He reached deep into the force and felt for the hypnotic control that twisted Dev Sibwara to the alien's will. The shadow of something enormous darkened most of Dev's memories. The boy had tremendous strength in the force, though.
Tell the Jedi to hurry along with us. Promise anything.
Realization flashed through Dev. The Siroop meant to reduce humankind to breeding animals and energy sources. They would lie, kill, torture, and maim to achieve domination. They deserved nothing but hatred. Luke Skywalker called down from the tabletop. Hate is the dark side. Don't give in to it.
What?
Asked Master Fear Wurung.
What is she saying to you?
Confused, Dev answered automatically.
He apologized for killing one of our kind, Master.
Tell him to precede us outside. He must hurry.
The sound of the siren evoked Dev's memory of the most terrible moment of his childhood. A civil defense scramble alarm. Invasion underway. Had Admiral Ifpicus attacked the orbiting ships after all? One more link in their twisted chain of lies. Caught up in his own thoughts, Dev almost missed seeing the swift sweep of Bluescale's tail. Struck on the head, the Jedi collapsed. His lightsaber flew loose, sliced through the table, and fell onto the floor where it lay hiss-humming.
A life with you is never dull.
Seated behind Han on the speeder, Leia stroked his scratchy chin. He managed a smile.
Ah, couldn't have that.
The speeder's roar seemed to change. No, it was another one.
We've got company over there.
They were surrounded.
So it was a trap. They can shoot us down and get rid of us for good.
Escaping arrest, Leia agreed.
Hang on.
Han spun the speeder in a tight arc back up into the foothills. Two more Imperial craft appeared in front of them. Han pulled back on altitude control, climbing and turning simultaneously. Leia's stomach swooped up through her midsection as he flipped the speeder through the top of the arc.
Now, good, they've got hot military models.
Something bright and noisy, a streak of laser cannon energy, passed beside them on the starboard side.
Han! Reinforcements! A pair of tiny X-wing silhouettes dropped out of the cloudy blue sky.
X-wing military fighters had twice the speed and firepower of those land-based speeders. Sure enough, the Imperial scattered. Han steered down the drainage canal toward the wide river. An X-wing swept into position at his 3 o'clock, and the other came in at 9 o'clock high. Leia waved. Inside the slanting cockpit, a black glove waved back. Where the river curved southeast, just north of Salistar, both fighters soared again toward space. They don't want to be seen this close to the city. It would alarm the Bakurans.
Glad somebody's thinking.
Shreds of dusty smoke covered the spaceport from hundreds of blast-offs. Han steered down into the murk and landed practically on top of the Falcon. It was guarded by the Wookiee. Leia dashed up the ramp behind Chewbacca. "I hope it's fueled," she exclaimed as she dropped into her high-backed seat.
"Topped up and ready for a trip to the core,"
Han translated as he hobbled into the cockpit.
"Leia, strap down."
The Imperial medic frowned, pressed Gary's head back with inexorable professional gentleness, and re-examined the faint burn across the hollow of her throat.
"Some kind of nervous system ionization, I suppose. That's what I'll put on the report."
She coughed.
May I go now?"
"I'm sorry. We've been asked to keep you here a little longer under observation."
What's going on? I heard a siren."
"They've struck at the orbital station."
Then it had begun. They'd taken Luke. She couldn't imagine even a Jedi with enough power to single-handedly resist whatever they hoped to do with him. The medic slipped out, and shortly thereafter a trooper came to the door.
"Come,"
he ordered. Gary had always managed to avoid Governor Nereus's private office. She'd heard disturbing rumors. And then there were Nereus's subtle attentions. The Bakurin governor sat at a desk with a polished off-white surface. He silently motioned her to a chair and watched the trooper leave. A framed tri-D on the nearest wall caught her attention first, a huge snarling carnivore. Its four long white fangs looked eerily substantial.
"The Ketron," said Nereus. "About Lelish 3.
"The teeth, are they real?"
"Yes. Look around you."
Above and beyond the tri-D hung others like it, each displaying sets of teeth.
"This is your collection, then?"
"Predator species. I have 17 worlds, including the Bakurin Crutch, and the most dangerous predator."
He tossed her a multifaceted crystal. Inside gleamed 2 pair of human incisors. She wanted to throw it at him.
"I hope you can add a set of Siruk teeth soon," she tried to sound cool.
He cleared his throat.
"I prefer taking specimens from individuals I have hunted down myself, of course. The rebel princess seems to have left my hospitality for the moment. She must be punished for defying orders. My dental specialist is not gentle."
"Fiend," she thought.
She'd play along for now, but Wylock Nereus would pay for his crimes. She swallowed hard to choke down a cough. This was the wrong time to catch a virus.
"What did the Empire do to Madame Belden?" she asked to distract him.
He smiled slowly.
"Madame Belden was scheduled for termination. Her husband agreed to permanent incapacitation as the price of keeping her companionship."
Gariel clenched her hands. Orne Belden had agreed?
"And evidently she submitted in order to protect him. We used a tiny creature native to the Jospro sector, which parasitizes the neocortex of the brain. Go ahead and cough, my dear. Your forehead is turning pink."
"I don't need to,"
she gulped. He folded his hands on the ivory desktop.
"How much of that meal did you share with Commander Skywalker?"
The pit of her stomach turned to lead.
"What do you mean?"
"I intercepted your request for a meal and had Skywalker's main dish inoculated at the kitchens. The Olabrian tricoid lays pods of 3 eggs in ripening fruit. Larvae hatch in a host's stomach, then migrate to the lungs while the host sleeps. They remain there for a day or two while they grow and the mouth parts develop.
Then they start nibbling toward the heart.
She seemed to feel something growing inside her.
Don't worry. The larva is extremely susceptible to pure oxygen. You're almost instantly curable.
For about the next hour. He touched a key on his desktop.
Medic, bring kit CD-12.
So, I got it instead of Skywalker. If so, at least Luke stood a chance up there.
No. Remember, 3 eggs in each pod. He definitely carries 2. Be proud of your friend, Garriel. Through him, the Siruk fleet may become infested.
The medic entered with an oxygen mask, which he placed over her nose and mouth. After breathing into it for a few minutes, she was able to spit out an egg. Repulsed, she gripped her knees. May I have a drink of water? He called for one. Once she'd sipped it and the medic had left carrying his specimen jar, she said, I understand there's going to be a battle. May I observe it from your war room?
No need to go anywhere.
He fiddled with his desk console. A small but detailed hologram of near space appeared over his desk. He bent down, reached into a desk compartment, and raised a sealed bottle of Nemana nectar.
To celebrate the Imperial victory,
he said with a flourish.
Dev's heart rate accelerated as the shuttle approached the orbiting Imperial defense web. Peering out the shuttle's main viewport, he could see slower shuttles docking with orbiting ships. Humans were scrambling for battle. Directly in front of him, Blue Scale, Firwurung, and the others warbled among themselves. They sat on the shuttle's deck, curled around the front seats. This craft looked like any other Imperial ship shuttling its crew to an orbiting cruiser. When the shuttle landed in the docking bay of the Shwirur, Dev volunteered to carry the unconscious Jedi inside. He had tried repeatedly to communicate with him, but Skywalker seemed completely unable to hear. Entechment circuitry worked only on conscious individuals. There would be a few seconds, at least.
You'll have to move quickly, Dev thought hard at the helpless Jedi. They're not going to create any openings.
He carried the prisoner into the spacious Entechment lab. The new Entechment platform bed stood against a bulkhead near the old standard chair.
Now's the time, Dev exclaimed through the Force. They'll have you trapped if you don't move now.
Skywalker did not respond. Sorrowing, Dev steadied the Jedi as Firwurung pressed Skywalker against the table. Restraints snapped around his ankles and waist, but his arms dangled away from the trip panels. Firwurung pressed them into place. The bed tipped backward with its captive. The hatch slid open. Blue Scale swept in and marched to Dev's side.
The Jedi human will be unconscious for some time, you guess?
Dev spread his hands. It will be difficult to wait, Elder.
Blue Scale turned his massive head to fix Dev with one hypnotic black eye, then whistled what Dev had dreaded to hear.
You are in desperate need of renewal.
Wait, exclaimed Firwurung. Dev has served us well. Let us reward him.
He stroked the old Entechment chair.
Sit down, Dev. There is time. I will place the IVs and lower the catchment arc myself, exactly as I promised.
Dev's tongue swelled like pillow stuffing. His fawning hadn't convinced any of them. How hideously had he acted all these years?
Don't you smell yourself?
Blue Scale sang softly.
So that was how they'd caught him. Seizing his last free moment, he jumped for Skywalker. His good hand and his aching one closed on the helpless Jedi's throat.
I need nothing, he cried. You'll never...
Lights went out in the chamber. Words died in his throat. The weak-minded little Kuwek Luke had been controlling honked confusion with the rest of them, not realizing its tail had crushed the control board and extinguished cabin lights. Luke only hoped that he'd also disabled the abominable alien machines. He could tell the aliens from Dev by their presences, even in the dark. One potent individual tramped toward a power-locked hatchway. Luke had already unlatched his bonds with the Force.
Dev, get under something. They'll trample you.
Right. Dev's voice sounded giddy with elation. From a safe spot near the bulkhead, Luke stretched out his right hand and visualized his lightsaber. It had to be close. Less than a second later, its satisfying weight arrived. He extended the saber's blade. The chamber lit eerie green, and the aliens' alarmed whistles rose to shrieks. Two black eyes reflected the saber a moment before it sliced below them. Another alien bellowed. Luke spun and decapitated it.
Big Blue finally kicked the hatch in and escaped. Another followed him into the bright corridor.
Now what? Jev shouted.
Stay low!
Three mechanical shapes that resembled R2 appeared in the hatchway. The first droid rushed him. He sliced it diagonally with the saber and reached for the others with the force. One fired a pair of stun bolts at him. He deflected one bolt back towards his attacker and the other at its partner. Both overloaded and switched off. But a weird stench in the force, like the presence of a soul half decayed, only faded slightly. The cruiser reeked in his senses, permeated with stolen human energies. Dev crept out from behind the grim chair. Glimmers of dark side energy lingered around it from thousands of victims' terrorized agony. Dev's pale brown skin looked olive green by the saber's light, and he gripped a paddle beamer with both hands. Perspiration ran down Luke's face, even with his mind relaxed into the force. Are onboard control systems powered by human energies, too? Dev's frown deepened.
I don't know. I've never thought about it. It's possible.
I can feel it. Can you take me to the engineering sector?
Anne got the Millennium Falcon where Commander Thanis wanted her. The Falcon dipped and dove while he chased down droid fighters and poured energy into their miserably strong shields. They came at him so thickly that he managed to fry a few with the Falcon's engine blast. But where was Luke? Three Imperial TIE fighters swooped overhead. They might be on his side, but Han didn't trust Commander Thanis 1 minute longer than the Fluties lasted. Caught in the middle of an invasion maneuver, one big Suruk vessel had already launched a dozen landing craft. Sluggish and underpowered, those had made a poor first ring of offense. Han couldn't tell if the Imperial's demp guns were working. His vector took him close to a big Flutie cruiser, one of three slowly moving in on Bakura.
Luke's in there, on board that big cruiser.
Leia's voice, carried on both of Han's headphone channels, seemed to sound between his ears.
Quick, put out word to our forces that it's not to be attacked.
Look at that,
someone exclaimed. Once the two-tone Flutie jamming stopped, and he could hear the inter-squad frequency again. Shuttles and escape pods popped off the Saruk cruiser like snap rivets from a stressed coolant vein.
You were right. Luke's in there.
Luke and Dev crept through a cramped spiral ramp toward the 18th deck where the engineering area was. Luke's sense of urgency grew stronger. Whenever they encountered a place where human energy had been trapped to power the ship, Luke set it free with his saber. They reached a junction. Their corridor went forward, slowly curving to the right. But another, narrower opening branched right more sharply.
Ambush, Luke's senses shouted.
Cautiously, he stepped around the corner to the right, pressed against the bulkhead, then turned to listen behind a broad metal hatch.
Dev's choked cry whirled Luke around in time to see a broad hatch in the floor slide open. A Puwek leapt through, seized the boy from behind, and brandished a claw at his throat. Dev ducked and fired his paddle beamer over one shoulder. The Puwek collapsed, leaving a thin trail of red blood across Dev's neck.
Guided by his subconscious, Luke whirled and slashed behind him. Two more Puweks had appeared as if from thin air. They fell wounded and shrieking, but others lurked in an opening where he'd seen no hatchway. They pelted him with diffused blue blaster bolts. They were still shooting to stun. His saber deflected bolts onto bulkheads and alien flesh. Dev cried out and fell to the deck. Luke hadn't seen or felt anything hit him. Dev, he shouted. The massive blue alien dove toward Luke through the broad hatch. It fired a steady silver beam. Dev lunged up from the deck. From behind Big Blue, he fired his paddle beamer into the base of its tail. The alien twisted its upper body toward Dev and fell limp-legged. Luke dashed forward, brandishing his saber. Ducking the silvery beam, Dev pressed his paddle to Blue's head and fired. The creature honked, then screamed. The scream ended in a gurgle. Dev zigzagged his beamer across its head. The aliens retreated up both curving corridors. Luke relaxed, coughing a little. Deep in his throat, something tickled. In Dev's eyes, Luke saw pain, guilt, and triumph.
Who was that?
He controlled me. Dev stared at the gray deck tiles. But Firwurum was my master. The small brown with the V on his head, the one whose foreclaw you severed. Firwurum is the really dangerous one. We're all dead if he catches you, everyone, everywhere.
Why? He didn't seem to be in charge.
No, but he runs the Intekments.
He meant to force you to intech other humans from a distance. The Siruk want to enslave the whole galaxy.
Well, let's get the job done before more of them show up.
Engineering was a jumble of controls and conduits, but Luke had no trouble finding the master display panel. This locus created a gargoyle imitation of life so powerful, so horribly twisted that he flinched. 100 intermingled energies seethed at his subliminal senses. Freshly intact energies writhed frantically within the numb, frayed ribbons of others' nearly spent volition. Luke swung his saber through the console, then shifted his body and reversed the stroke. The gargoyle cacophony fell silent. He took a long, slow look around. The chamber and the ship felt clean at last. However, now the Shriwer was crippled. He coughed again. They had life support, weapons, and communication. No med packs, though. Nothing for strained leg muscles, and no breath mask to filter out whatever was irritating his lungs.
Let's get to a shuttle.
He pushed off from the control panel. Dev led him to 3 giant shuttle bays. Every flyer port and escape pod crane lay empty.
Abandoned ship, Luke muttered. Escape the terrible Jedi and his mighty apprentice.
Dev swept out his arms. Then this is our lifeboat. I'll take you to the bridge.
Sorry about the damp guns,
Han crowed at Commander Thanis. Both had misfired, disabling the patrol craft, and he wasn't sorry at all. Good thing he hadn't gotten one for the Falcon.
Casualties of war, as is Commander Skywalker, it seems. I am sorry. I admired his capabilities.
Don't count Luke out, Leia said tightly.
Your Highness, if the Siruk retreat, we are now specifically ordered to destroy that cruiser.
Why?
Contagion, General. I wasn't told specifics.
Leave it alone for now, Commander. You're not retreating yet. She didn't believe that contagion line any more than Han did. Governor Nereus just wanted revenge. Combined Alliance and Imperial forces had almost closed an arc around 2 more alien cruisers, but the aliens resisted. Black space sparkled with ships, shields, and energy as the Siruk concentrated firepower on Alliance ships that occupied key attack points.
Dominant to Falcon, close up that gap at 022.
Han spun his ship to face Solar North. The gap in question was big enough to send a Star Destroyer through.
Got it covered, Han answered Commander Thanis. Red Group, the rest of you follow me.
After the Falcon, like a flock of chicks, sped 4 X-Wings and 5 TIE fighters. An hour later, Han was still dodging collision debris and approaching exhaustion. Thanis drove his pilots hard, but the battle was his. A sensor lit. Massive communications had abruptly started to flow between Flutie ships. Han's sideboard screen flashed a single message.
Disengage, full retreat. Disengage, full retreat. Disengage.
3PO, down in the cargo bay, was listening to the Fluties and translating. Han slapped his control board madly, cutting Imperial ships out of his transmission channels. Over the inter-squad channel, he ordered,
Alliance ships! The Fluties are getting out! Full shields, watch the Imperials! All squadron leaders, get your ships away from the Imperial fighters! Manchisco, you're in the dominance range, get out of it!
They're retreating? What about Luke? Leia exclaimed. We can't fire on that cruiser.
And we're not shooting at the Imperials before they fire on it. There wasn't much future for a smuggler with a conscience.
The Falcon shuddered from beam lamps to hyperdrive. Han leapt back from momentarily ionized controls. Chewbacca snarled in his ears. Light splashed the starfield in front of him. A second blast from the Dominant. Han blinked.
Flurry? Manchisco? Manchisco, you there?
The Flurry was static and debris. They got her. Han clenched a fist at Thanis.
Thanks for nothing, Thanis.
Over to Inter Squad.
That's it. You all saw it. The Empire just broke off our truce. We're back at war, us against them. Remember the Death Star.
Garriel whooped as the Siruk fleet fled, but within a minute, all the Silver Alliance ship dots on Governor Nereus's projection turned red. One by one, they began darkening. She gasped and sprang off her chair.
They're not!
Wylik Nereus rolled his nectar goblet stem between his heavy fingers.
Not what, Senator?
Turning on... attacking the rebels. Not only that, but she had to assume that the retreating Siruk still held Luke prisoner, and he was dying without knowing it. A comlink beeped.
Yes?
Nereus called.
Sir, our sensors show 30 people gathered at the intersection of 10th Circle and High Street, with more approaching.
What are you bothering me for? Suppress it, he snapped.
Governor Nereus cut the connection and then sipped from his goblet.
Rebel assistance is already in the past. Now we must think of the future. What would Bakura suffer if Imperial Command learned that we accepted aid from rebel forces?
Han didn't need anyone to tell him they were losing. He'd managed to gather several X-Wings and an A-Wing into a moderately effective formation, but no matter how he and his shipmates used the Falcon's armaments, one arc at a time, Commander Thanis closed a tight classic globe.
We're all dead, every ship in the battle group, Han said, unless somebody comes up with something brilliant and fast.
We're starting to leave Luke out of the equation.
Maybe he is out. Thanis' drift vector's gonna take him right past that Flutie cruiser.
From his post in the gun turret, the Wookiee had overheard their conversation. Something in the pattern in front of Han sparked his memory of a gaming table long ago and far, far away. Something brilliant.
But if we could take the dominant, our fighters might be able to break out and scatter.
Sure. How?
Look where that Imperial patrol craft's hanging, the one about 16 degrees north. If we dropped back about 20 degrees and rammed it, it'd squirt out of formation and hit the dominant hard aft. The Falcon's the only ship we've got left with enough mass to carry it off. Thanis deserves his behind cooked.
Count on you to try a carom shot on a Carrick-class cruiser. Han keyed the comm.
Listen up. Form up behind the Falcon and get ready to break for open space.
Leia swung into the cockpit. Han glanced at her, frowned, then waved one soot-streaked hand gallantly at the co-pilot's seat. Little gestures like that made her love him.
Thank you. Chewie wants to ride it out in the turret, he explained.
I understand.
Han started shunting power away from all systems except a few, thrusters, force shields, and the upper gun turret.
Okay, he said. That's programmed. Now we get you to the escape pod.
Oh, no, she retorted. I'm a Skywalker, too. Maybe this is my destiny. Wouldn't this be perfect justice? Vader's daughter ramming an Imperial ship for the sake of the Alliance. Finally, she could think about Darth Vader without flinching.
Watch this, father.
Luke and Dev finished their circuit of the Shriwur's bridge. All the equipment was covered with alien symbols, and Dev didn't know how to work it. Luke was also trying to follow the battle through the Force, although his strength was weakening. He reached out to check on Leia. Her determination to face certain destruction caught him off guard.
Ramming? In the Falcon?
Luke tumbled down to the deck and ignored Dev's questions, ignored everything. He had only seconds. He sent his awareness questing across space for a presence he knew only faintly, Commander Pater Thanis. Thanis's thoughts, will, and worldview surrounded him. This battle was only a game, but a game he must win or finish his life in a slave mine? That explained plenty. Abruptly, Luke lost contact. He doubled over, coughing, trapped by his weakening body on the hard, cold deck of the Shriwur.
Sir?
Thanis' pilot looked up worriedly.
Is something wrong?
But Thanis blinked. For some reason, the image of Luke Skywalker had sprung into his mind. Dismissing it, he made a difficult decision. He must destroy the threat of contagion, no matter what it cost him.
The dominant kept closing, growing perceptibly larger in the viewport.
Dev, is this cruiser armed? Luke asked.
I assume so. Dev reached down a hand.
Find the weapon station.
Luke let Dev pull him up off the deck. Luke stared out the viewport. The dominant blasted another X-Wing.
I trusted you, Thanis. I trusted you.
Alien presences snagged his attention from above on another deck.
I've found weaponry, Dev cried. You've got an ion cannon online, I think. Try aiming it with that wheel key. Hurry.
Luke glanced up at the overhead panel. The dominant would be in range within minutes. He swiveled the keyboard into line with Dev's battle array. First target. He rolled the wheel key and fired. Nothing happened on Dev's screen. He relaxed deeper into the Force and shot again.
There!
Dev pointed at a visible trail through battle debris. One of the Shriwur's smaller ships imploded. The remaining pair broke formation and shrank into distant points of light. Something in the ceiling clicked.
Luke lunged aside and ignited his saber. Down to the deck dropped a brown alien armed with a paddle beamer. Without pausing to think, he swung two-handed. Dev skittered backward. Master! Fearwurung swept away from the Jedi and brandished his crippled stump.
Traitor! Betrayer of all you held dear!
The alien swept a silver beam mercilessly and accurately through Dev's shoulders. Dev crumpled. He fell on his back, bitterly regretting his relapse. Luke leapt into a short, suspended somersault and grabbed both edges of the overhead trap door, knowing the big alien would have him in another moment. He could do no more on his own. This was the end. A simultaneous flash from all status screens almost blinded him as he dropped. Commander Thanis must have struck. Bulkheads, decks, and instruments sparkled before they went dim. He sensed Dev's presence, but not the alien's. Thanis' attack had killed him.
Dev!
Here.
Dev, open your mind to me.
As he'd shown Epi Belden how she might heal herself, he gave Dev that knowledge.
Draw on your strength. You can do it. I've got to get us off this ship.
A horrendous cough interrupted him. Automatically, he turned the healing focus onto his chest. Two greedy pinpoints of life gleamed with primitive instincts.
Eat. Cling. Reproduce. Survive.
Leia clenched the armrests of her cockpit chair, frightened nearly numb. The Surook cruiser drifted directionless like a huge blistered egg.
Rogue leader to Falcon. We're clear to run at the Dominant.
Wait. Bully Commander Thanis into changing course so he can't hit the Suruvi ship again. But don't destroy him. The Alliance could use an Imperial cruiser. The egg-shaped cruiser loomed closer. Han steered low along its surface, looking for a place to dock the Falcon. We're coming, Luke, Leia thought. A terrifying stillness hung where his presence had been. Gloom settled over Gariel Captison like a sticky gray rain cloud when Commander Thanis' Dominant blasted the alien cruiser. Nereus touched his console and ordered, "Bring up the Prime Minister."
"Uncle Yorg?"
"No, he's a good man. Bakura needs him. You can't..."
"He has become a symbol. I've tried to be lenient with Bakura, and it betrays my good intentions. I give up. I must operate like any other Imperial governor, branding the terror of the Empire upon Bakuran hearts. Unless..."
He stroked his chin.
"Unless he or another representative of the Captison family would publicly ask Bakura to accept me as his successor. You could save your uncle's life, Gariel. Tell me you'll do so within 3 minutes, and he'll survive."
Conscience jabbed at her from both sides. She couldn't allow Governor Nereus to execute Uncle Yorg, but neither could she ask Bakura to lie down for Wylet Nereus. Gary stared around Governor Nereus's office, taking in plaques, trides, and crystals. Teeth, parasites. What other loathsome interest did he keep hidden? "You say you'd let him live, but would you? Or would you infect him with some parasite, like Epi Belden?" "That's not alive." 5 stormtroopers entered, one of them pushing her manacled uncle with the business end of a blast rifle. Yorg stood, straight-shouldered, looking taller in her eyes than Nereus could for all the governor's bulk.
"One offer, Captison. 1 minute to accept. Get on the tridee. Tell your people to lay down their weapons and submit to Imperial rule. To me, as your designated successor. Or die here with your niece watching."
Yorg Captison didn't hesitate. The image of dignity. He pulled his shoulders back.
"I'm sorry, Gary. Don't watch. Remember me bravely." "Gariel?"
Governor Nereus licked his upper lip.
"Will you make the broadcast? Perhaps I could sweeten the part."
At that instant, the trooper beyond Uncle Yorg buckled and fell. A piercing electronic whine rose from all 5 troopers' helmets. Gary leapt for the nearest incapacitated trooper, seized his rifle, and waved it in Governor Nereus's general direction. Evidently, he'd hesitated. His ornamental blaster remained in his cross-draw holster. The stormtroopers writhed. Even from a distance, the whine hurt her ears. What was going on? Take off your blaster, Nereus, she said shakily. Whatever this was, it looked like her chance.
"You don't even know how to find the safety," Nereus answered.
but he kept both hands on his ivory desktop. Clumsily, Uncle Jorg seized another helpless trooper's blast rifle with his fingertips. The door slid open. Eppie Belden marched in. Her round-faced caregiver, Cliss, slunk behind. Eppie brandished a blaster. "Ha!" she exclaimed. "Got 'em all!" She strode straight to Governor Nereus and lifted the blaster from his holster, then disarmed the stormtroopers.
"Cliss, get a vibro knife and cut Jorg out of those binders."
Cliss hustled out, pale and obviously ill at ease in a confrontation. Gary sympathized with Cliss. Eppie's bravura was startling.
"You!"
He snarled at Nereus.
"If those hang, you're dead. Do you understand?"
"Who are you, old woman?"
Eppie laughed.
"Start guessing, youngster. I'm on Belden's revenge."
In the darkness, Luke could think of only one thing to try. He breathed slowly and focused his attention on the pinpoints of living instinct inside his chest. He sensed their ravenous hunger. As panic threatened to immobilize him, he thought of the smell of fresh blood. Sweet, warm, faintly metallic. He extended the thinnest thread of a probe toward one creature. Recognition. Some minuscule awareness understood. He imagined mouth parts pulling free and a head turning toward him. One by one, he drew each parasite upward to the scent. Then, when he could feel it in his throat, he spat it out and crushed it. He lay limp on the deck tiles, too tired to feel triumphant. Sleep beckoned. That was how Han and Leia found him. Han knelt and raised him over one shoulder. Luke swallowed. "Bring Dev." Safely on board the Falcon, Leia knelt beside Luke's bunk and rested her head on his shoulder. Delicately, he accepted the link to her strength. Soon he sat up.
"I'll rest later," he insisted.
"Really rest." "You'd better, but we haven't got time now. We still got the Dominant to deal with. Its repair crews have probably been busy."
"Well, what happened to it?"
"It blew out its lateral thrusters again, so it can't steer. And signals coming off Bakura are crazy. There's a revolution going on." Luke slid to his feet. The right leg still ached, but not as badly. "I'm ready," he said, but he let Leia support him. They shuffled to the cockpit together. Leia helped him fall into a seat.
"Hey, youngster," Han greeted him. "You look pretty good for a dead man."
"Thanks." Luke pointed at the subspace radio.
"Anything on there about Gariel Captison?" "Yeah, maybe. Some groundside group claims it's got Wylock Nereus in custody. They're barricading themselves inside the Imperial Offices sector of the Bakur complex. I think we can deal with Thanis the way he deserves. Then we'll worry about Nereus. Here goes."
Han swung the Falcon around to deliver a death blow. "Wait! We want that ship. Even damaged, it'd be a lucky catch." Luke leaned toward the pickup. "All forces, this is Commander Skywalker. Cease fire immediately. Alliance forces confirm on this channel." The Terthanas flinched as Skywalker's order went out over the subspace radio. During this battle, something had reawakened in him, something that cared, something he'd buried years ago at Alzok 3. Nereus wouldn't hesitate to send him back there, too. He glanced at a red-barred compartment. It hid a lever labeled Self-Destruct. His career was over. He turned to his aide, a stiff-backed five-year man.
"Abandon ship, all hands."
Crew members might get far enough away to escape destruction. Luke tried to thrust the Force across the distance to touch Commander Thanis once more. He couldn't. If Thanis elected to activate self-destruct on the Dominant, Luke could do nothing. Except out into the Force, he projected calm. Peace. Peace was possible. And this was Thanis' last chance. Thanis stared at his black boots, spotlessly polished on a polished deck. At Bakura, as at Alzok 3, he'd received unethical orders from a superior officer he did not respect. These could be his final moments, sacrificed to an uncaring empire, the legacy of a dead emperor. Or he could recant and admit that he'd misspent his entire life.
"Communications," he barked.
Give me a channel to Skywalker, wherever he is.
Done, sir.
Peter Thanis faced the communications station.
Commander Skywalker, I must warn you of something. Any contact you have with humans endangers their lives. Nereus ordered me specifically to ensure that you did not return to Bakura. He says you now carry some kind of infestation or plague.
I've taken care of that. Remember, I am a Jedi.
He should have expected that.
If I surrendered the Dominant, would you guarantee that you will release my crew members who conducted this battle under my orders?
Yes. We'll send all Imperial personnel to a neutral pickup point and let them return to their homes, unless any want to defect.
Done, said Thanis. Take me to the Alliance and deal with me as you will.
Skywalker exhaled heavily.
I accept your ship and, temporarily, your person. Shuttle over to my...
He seemed to hesitate.
My flagship. Please bring a medical corpsman. I'll see that he's released as well, but I have another human on board who was badly burned.
Luke, Han, and Leia walked to the Falcon's airlock and waited. Several minutes later, Commander Thanis stepped through with both hands raised. Leia ran a weapons scanner over him. Meanwhile, Commander Thanis' medic trained a medical sensor up and down Luke's body. This way. Luke led away from the top airlock. 3PO sat at the hologram board. Behind him on a single bunk, Dev lay still. 3PO stood.
Greetings, he began cheerily. I am...
Quiet, Leia murmured. Take this pair of binders and attach yourself to Commander Thanis. Escort him to the aft cargo bay. You're designated security until further notice. Luke led the medic to Dev and gently drew a sheet off the youth's scarred, folded arms. He's in a Jedi healing trance, Luke said, and he's in no pain for now. See what you can do for him.
I'll try, but frankly, I've encountered energy blast trauma before. There's really nothing I can do. If he regains consciousness, he'll suffer.
Please try, said Luke. Luke rejoined Han in the cockpit.
We've got an invitation, Han announced, from a lady named Epi Belden. She, claims to know you. She's with your friend Gariel at the Bakur complex. I guess there's a nasty prisoner they want the Alliance to deal with.
The Millennium Falcon swooped through a textured blanket of clouds toward Salistar. Peering between Han's head and Chewie's, Luke spotted a knot of people behind a blast barricade at the complex roofport. A familiar shape waited with them.
R2, he exclaimed.
A swirl of long blue-green skirts backing away from the blocked-off landing zone was obviously Gariel. The Falcon dropped steadily on its repulsors. Gariel's uncle, the Prime Minister, stood near an unbound, defiant Wylet Nereus. He doesn't look like a prisoner to me, Leia muttered, pointing through the viewport. I'll make you a bet Governor Nereus doesn't intend to surrender the Salazar garrison. He could hold that against all of us for a long time. Han reached for belly gun controls. Don't you dare, Leia shook her head. We're back to diplomacy.
And we've got Commander Thanis. He could surrender the garrison, Luke said.
The Falcon settled to ground with a muffled thud.
Leia clenched her seat while Han sprang up and loosened his blaster in its leg holster. Okay, Goldenrod, Han called into the comlink. Bring Thanis to the main ramp.
Luke stood up more slowly. Leia almost saw two Lukes, one strong, cocky, and victorious, the image he meant to project, and one withdrawn, worried, exhausted, and in pain, tired enough to make mistakes. She squared her shoulders. Do you want to stay on board until it's obvious which way this is going? Sure. Luke scratched the back of his neck. Nereus probably thinks that he killed me anyway. He stepped to one side of the main hatch and unhooked his lightsaber. From there he could hear without being seen. Be careful. 3PO appeared around the bend in the corridor. Commander Thanis matched his pace step for step.
Your droid tells interesting stories, Thanis commented dryly. Despite the fact that he insists repeatedly that he's not much of a storyteller.
Educating the prisoner, 3PO? Commander Thanis had probably gotten an earful of Alliance propaganda. The main hatch hissed and then opened. Leia led the way down the ramp. Commander Thanis ignored the metallic escort he was shackled to and walked eyes ahead, expressionless. Leia stood forward. We brought Commander Thanis only to prove that he's in our hands, Governor. He is our prisoner, as I hear you are. Surrender your garrison, and you and all your people may leave Bakura freely, immediately. Governor Nereus smiled placidly at Leia.
Perhaps you forget that I still command 3,000 land-based troops. Furthermore, Imperial survivors are landing all over Bakura in lifeboats as we speak. You have had a single ship surrender to you, that is all.
We've moved the Dominant into a stationary orbit, Governor. Its armaments are locked onto the Salistar garrison. I know it's not designed for planetary assault, but it'll do considerable damage if we give the order. Someone shoved Leia from the left. Garriel strode between Han and Governor Nereus. She'd knotted her shawl over her skirt out of the way and wedged a blaster rifle under one arm. It dangled, ready to use. Governor, if nothing else is going to come of your treachery, then I shall make my own small gesture. I resign from Imperial service. Princess Leia, please accept my congratulations on your victory. Garriel stiffened, turning as pale as if she'd seen a ghost. Luke stood at the center of the Falcon's main hatch, saber in hand but not ignited, looking like a lithe, gray-suited shadow against the Falcon's dark interior. A thin little woman standing next to Garriel brightened and whispered,
"Hello, Jedi."
"No!"
Horror twisted Governor Nereus's heavy features.
"You can't be here! Get back on board! You'll infest us all!"
He whirled towards Gary. With speed that belied his age and bulk, he yanked the blast rifle from her. Nereus fired twice. One bolt deflected off the Falcon's hull. The other flashed toward Luke, intersecting a green-white blade that whipped into its path and deflected it back along its own course. Wylik Nereus fell, blank-eyed. Luke stumbled, too, and Garriel gasped. R2 rolled forward at top speed. Slowly, Luke pressed back to his feet. He waved the little droid back. Leia stepped around Governor Nereus's body toward the Bakurin Prime Minister. "Prime Minister Captison, if your people choose to rejoin the Empire, we will withdraw and leave you to conduct your own affairs. But if you choose to align yourself with the Alliance, we should negotiate a permanent truce immediately." Captison saluted Leia, then Luke.
"Your Highness, Commander, we thank you. It is not likely, however, that the Imperial garrison will surrender."
Luke walked slowly down the ramp.
"We have accepted Commander Thanis' surrender, including the Dominant, the land-based forces, and the Imperial garrison."
Leia held her breath and waited for Commander Thanis to contradict Luke's statement.
"Commander Thanis," Luke continued, "you are free from custody. If Bakura's citizens ask the Empire to leave, you will oversee the troops' withdrawal."
Thanis nodded and raised his wrist. 3PO's arm came with it.
"Let him go, 3PO, said Luke.
"You're just going to trust him?" Leia whispered to Luke.
"He's not forgetting the Dominant. Even if it's not up to full capacity, we hold the high ground. And besides, I have a feeling."
Luke returned to the Falcon to check on Dev. He enveloped Dev with his own strength, trying to anchor the boy's presence more strongly to his ravaged body. Dev returned a wash of gratitude. Then abruptly, light flooded out of the Dev spot in the Force. Luke flinched at its brilliance.
"Dev?"
The brilliant glimpse faded. Deb Sibwara's presence vanished with it into a vast surging sea of light. The medic glared at his medisensor.
"He really didn't have a chance, Commander."
Sometime later, a small hand was laid on his shoulder.
"Why? Why did you want to save him, of all people?" asked Garriel.
"He'd known suffering. I wanted him to know strength."
"You also gave him human compassion."
She slid her hands around his waist, then up toward his shoulders. Pulling him close, she whispered,
"Let it out, Luke.
It hurts, I know. You'll have joy later. The cosmos balances." Flinging pretense aside, Luke held her and cried.
Your world is beautiful, he murmured at last. I'm glad to have seen it. I have no desire to leave again, ever, said Gariel. Bakura will be sending an envoy to the Alliance, he said gently, trying to mask his last hope. You're perfectly trained for it. Her cheeks colored. I want to be your ally, Luke, but from a distance. He pushed back a quiet desolation that threatened to send him over another emotional brink. He mustn't think of spending forever alone. From a distance, he agreed, hesitantly touching her face. But just once, from here. She leaned into his arms. He kissed her, letting the moment flood his perception, petal-warm lips and the deep, sweet warmth of her life presence. Rank by rank, 1,000 Imperial personnel boarded a large but ancient Bakuran space liner under Commander Petur Thanis' eyes. Bakura wanted the Empire gone. All remaining Imperial war material, right down to the stormtrooper's armor, must be left to the Bakurans, forming the nucleus of their new home defense force. Units of that force would soon join the rebel fleet. At last, the final unit boarded. Ramp up! Thanis called in crisp military sing-song. He continued to stand on the ground, at attention. The shuttle lifted and began a slow turn. Thanis turned to the Bakuran guard. Sir, he said, take me to Prime Minister Captison. If you mean to refit a Carrick-class cruiser for service, you need experienced advice. I know that cruiser. The Bakuran lowered his Imperial blaster rifle. Under the Alliance, sir? Thanis nodded. That's right, soldier. Under the Alliance. I'm defecting. In his pilot seat on the Millennium Falcon, Han waved Leia to a seat behind Chewbacca. Might as well strap in, Leia. Luke has business to finish. It'll just take a minute. Then it's time to head back. Luke made his way to the primary airlock where Chewbacca had carried Dev's body. Sorrowfully, he reached down and brushed Gary's feather-soft shawl with his fingertips. Chewbacca had wrapped it tightly around Dev's head and shoulders after swathing the rest of him in an old blanket. He'd lost them both, Gariel and Dev. Yet both had touched and taught him. Both would live in his memory. Thanks, Luke whispered. Ready, Luke? Leia asked softly. Luke backed out of the airlock and it hissed shut. Wait a minute. He hurried back to the cockpit, strapped in, and stared out the main viewport. Leia clasped his hand. Han pulled the hatch release, then reversed lateral thrusters. As the Falcon accelerated heavenward, Dev's body plummeted toward Bakura. It finished burning clean and brightly down through the planet's high atmosphere. Luke stared at the meteor, a momentary flare of brilliance, like all life. Nothing really in the sweep of time, but everything in the Force. This is Anthony Heald. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The Truce at Bakura by Kathy Tyers. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel. Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Star Wars, The Truce at Bakura is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1993, all rights reserved. The book, Star Wars, The Truce at Bakura, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.